Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Hey, it's Fran from Chicks in the Office. It's peak summer. One plan is turning into five, but trust, I'll be wearing Abercrombie to all of them. Catch me in their Sloan tailored pan at work and then the happy hour right after. The Dylan dress for dinner plans when you want something easy but still put together. And of course, their denim. Because Abercrombie denim just works, no matter the plan. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.
Here with Artful, episode 310. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Terrell Bollins. I'm back. Thanks for filling in the other night, boys. Also, I'll just say it off the top. Obviously led by Trill, who is still a massive Colts fan and diehard, wears this Colts sweatsuit 7 days a week.
Huge.
All three of our teams did win for the first time in a long time today. So that was interesting. That's kind of cool.
Came down to the wire for you, Trill. It really came down to your team.
Yeah, I was definitely watching that. Well, okay, so the reason I wasn't watching it is so my wife went on like a little like we getaway, right? Like I'm not making like a Derek joke or whatever here. Like, you know, she just needed to get away, and she went camping with a few friends and all that stuff. And well, look, I mean, it's as isolated as you can be or whatever. So hopefully nobody gets anything, but you needed time off with the kid. Meaning I had the kid from Friday at noon until today at like just like 30 minutes before the podcast ended. And by the time the Colts game came around, I only had energy just to lay there and let my kid crawl all over me. Like I love spending time with her. Like I had the most fun weekend, but my God, they were right when they said it's exhausting. It is tiring. Parents need to be honest about that. It's fucking tiring. It's exhausting. Anyway, but that's why I wasn't really like up on the Colts game. Otherwise I would have watched every minute and relished beating the Packers. And even though I had like no deep seated dislike for the Packers, it's like anytime you beat one of the major tentpole NFL franchises, like the Packers, the Cowboys or the Steelers, it feels good.
It's nothing like a tone.
What do you mean? Like, what about, okay, so who did the Chargers play? Get me up to speed with the rest of the NFL.
They barely squeaked a win past the 0-9 at the point, now 0-10 Jets.
Boy.
Win's a win in the NFL, boys.
Yep.
I'm having a tough year this year, and I don't think it's due to COVID, and I don't think it's due to anything else other than the fact that I feel like I'm at that age where I'm a fair weather fan. I feel like that's what it is, because you know what I'm into right now? I'm into Indiana football, baby.
Yeah, that's right. Having the year of the century.
Yeah. I mean, now like I'm ride or die for this team. And it'll be the same. Like I like the Indiana public school teams. And so like, I was really into that yesterday and it was really disappointing, but at the end of the day, it's like, God, I always feel like IU for the last 10 years has played Ohio State and Michigan, even when IU's been like not that great, like very competitively. So in my heart of hearts, I'm like, you know, probability wise, they're not going to pull it off. And then you kind of came down there towards the end of the game. You're like, oh my God, like this could be the year. And then I started like dancing through these fanciful scenarios in my head where Indiana somehow makes the college football playoff by like whatever reason. And it's just, it's the year I wouldn't go. It would like, that's the thing that would happen to me, is like the once in a lifetime thing would be the year where I'd be like, I can't in good conscience travel to go to this game right now. But it didn't happen, right? But it's still like a fucking, like one of the most fun college football teams I've rooted for.
We have Allison Breon today. We have Allison Breon today. Very funny with Allison Bree. Reviewing Run on Hulu. Horror again. Horror post. Everyone's like, do horror in October. So we did horror after Halloween.
Yeah.
This is more of a thriller. It's more of a thriller than it is horror. I guess the vibes are similar.
Big mood in that movie.
Top five foods that make you feel terrible. Foods that make you feel terrible. But I think good food that makes you feel, that's what we're going for. It's like, we're not saying like eating a bowl.
Eat shit.
Like, yeah, like a bowl of poop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like we mean like food that you enjoy, but you know the second you eat it, you're going to feel like ass.
To qualify for the list, you have to keep going back and continuously punishing yourself with this because you don't care about the ramifications of eating it. You know what I mean?
Like cottage cheese exactly. Bites.
Exactly. Yep. Cottage cheese bites. That's something everyone's eaten before. That's definitely one that's on my list as well. I hope you don't steal it from me.
Before we get into that, though, our next episode will be released after Thanksgiving. So what are we what Thanksgiving food are we most excited for? What are we most?
Oh, stuffed mushrooms. My favorite one that I realized wasn't that common for people outside of the area.
The very common stuffed mushrooms.
I just love stuffed mushrooms. You guys are like, what the fuck? Thanksgiving?
I mean, I like stuffed mushrooms. It's always going to be stuffing for me because that's just something that you wait all year to get. Turkey, you have turkey throughout the year. Yeah, it's not the big, carved turkey or the real turkey or whatever.
It's our Arrow Farms or whatever that is. Deli sliced turkey.
It's Oscar Mayer turkey. But you can get your turkey fixed. But stuffing, it doesn't feel like if someone like were eating stuffing in June, it wouldn't feel right. It's not a hot temperature item. Like you don't want it to be 95 degrees outside and you're eating a tortilla filled with stuffing.
No.
Your friend Brent is like, what are you eating for lunch? And I'm just stuffing, just stovetop I made at home. And he's like, dude, it's fucking June. Father's Day is next week.
You know, I always thought it was Stouffer's, the stuffing. It's not. It's Kraft.
What?
It's Kraft Stouffer's stuffing or something. Like the one that everyone knows. It was like a Mandela effect thing. I read once.
I thought Stovetop was like the go-to stuffing brand.
I think it's whatever that brand is owned by Kraft. Like Kraft is on the thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, Kraft owns a lot of stuff. Or Mondelez or like whatever the split they did. I think the snack stuff's the Mondelez. That's a very confusing CPG company because they everything was under Kraft and then they split into two companies.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's confusing though. Yeah, Stovetop is Kraft.
Yeah.
But now that you say that, now I'm starting to think that's something I thought as well.
Stouffer's? Yeah, I always thought it was Stouffer's. It was Stouffer's stuffing. But Stouffer's
probably has a stuffing, though, but their stuffing's probably like a microwave, whereas a stovetop's the box mix.
No, they don't. Actually, now that I look it up, they just don't.
So I'm saying it really fucked up my brain when I read it. I actually saw it in that the new
They have a baked chicken stuffing and gravy thing, same. But that's not like a wow.
I saw it in a How To with John Wilson, the new Nathan Fielder show. They had a whole guy went to a conference for Mandela effect stuff. I had no clue.
Huh.
That sounds awesome.
See, I'm someone who you give me stovetop or regular fresh stuffing, I'll eat either of them. I don't care.
I don't like it. I don't like that wet bread consistency.
Oh, we know.
I love it.
Not for me.
Like catching a little crunchy.
If you like stuffing, I'd be shocked because you don't like bread to begin with. So
yeah, this is like the seasoned, the
more moist version just seems that'd be crazy for you to like.
Yeah, it's like seasoned or urban crusted bread pudding, not like bread pudding, the actual bread pudding, but like urban crusted wet bread.
I'll tell you what, Thanksgiving is one of those holidays too, where if you do look for, I mean, one of those, it is the holiday for this, where if you look forward to something and like that year, it just so happens to not have been great. That's a shame. Like, I guess you could make Thanksgiving food the rest of the year, but like, what are the chances of you doing that? Like I had, when we first moved to Texas, by the time Thanksgiving rolled around, we had made friends in the neighborhood. We did like this potluck thing, I believe. This might have been the year after. And we did it in like a cul-de-sac and like the fried a turkey and all this stuff. And one family was they were making the gravy and they blew it. They fucked up on the gravy.
Oh, no.
And the gravy was just not good. It was like the gravy broke or something in the process. I don't know what actually happened, but it was there was no gravy. And that's like, that sucks. That's it. Like, yeah. It's 365 days now till the next attempt at gravy. And I bring that up frequently, actually. Whenever it's Thanksgiving, I would be like to my parents, like, hey, remember the gravy mishap? You can't be the family that I wouldn't want to be the gravy family. Like, I'd want to be like the specialty pie family. It's like if your pie doesn't work, whatever, there's other things. But if you fuck the gravy up, you're second in line to the turkey. Like, that's it. You've ruined it for everybody.
No. But that's also like, it's also something where shame on whoever planned it. Maybe your family, Jeff, for not building in redundancies.
Yeah. Well, we live and learn.
I would have a gravy redundancy there. I would tell Meemaw that look, the Andersons are making the gravy, but like Meemaw, you whip up a batch of Meemaw's gravy.
And if I recall, they saved it too late too, or like they revealed it too late. So no one had time to go. So you're like,
they're too ashamed. And that just compounds their mistake.
And if you nail the gravy, who cares?
Like, exactly.
No one,
the offensive line
no one's celebrating the gravy family. They're like, well, the turkey was great. Good job to the turkey family.
Can I rant real quick?
Yes.
I'm on mute on my TV. You know the commercial for the food delivery service? And I won't say him by name just because I'm not trying to, you know. But it's with Mark Hamill and Patrick Stewart.
It stinks.
No tomatoes.
But they're like, it's like they can't just be like, I'm ordering a burger for dinner tonight. They're like, I'm ordering spicy tuna tacos with mayo aioli. It's like the fancy, like just like the most like
a ciabatta burger. They said,
yeah, it's like the most like what do millennials eat these days?
Sort of thing. Avocado toast with salt.
Wait, is that the company that you said you were? There was one set of commercials for delivery you didn't like. Was it this one? I forget.
No, there was another one that it was just like there's one with like CGI characters that it gets my attention, but it plays too often.
I don't know which one that is.
I know which one you're talking about. It's a girl, you done like a warehouse or whatever.
Yeah, it's just they got
I'm my own dad or something.
Well, they got right? Mark Hamill and Patrick Stewart, and they didn't have any money to do anything good with them. They're like, well, we're just gonna get them to say they're ordering food. Which I guess like in the 1950s sense of commercials actually works quite well.
Yeah.
Here's a celebrity saying they're going to use the service. I mean, that does fulfill the basic premise of the commercial. But you think if you got Mark Hamill and Patrick Stewart, you might like, I don't know. I know if this is like a post-COVID thing. Look, it's tough to make a commercial now. I get it. Maybe getting them together and getting everyone tested into a warehouse was the best thing you could come up with. I have some sympathy there. I specifically just don't like the food they mentioned in that commercial because I just like when I use food delivery, it's like I'm getting some fried rice.
Mm.
I'm not getting like spicy aioli, like cabbage rolls or whatever. I'm sure some folks are.
I don't understand. You know what's the food I don't get ordering either is like most some Italian food I think travels really well. I don't think pasta travels really well. Like I've only done it a few times, but every time I've gotten pasta delivered, I've not been pleased.
Well, because they all come in that same – they all come in the same tin with the white top on it. And pasta never looks good coming out of that tin with the white cardboard on top of it.
Nope, just not a fan.
Part of pasta is that presentation. Like, you know, you want the pile.
Getting chicken parm, and when you get the clear plastic top and you take it off and it just looks like beautiful, it's like you're looking at a little pizza, that is a great feeling. Love that.
I think I feel like what's the food that travels best with delivery? I
sandwiches, man. Sandwiches are always, I've never had a bad sandwich that just didn't take well to delivery.
I think Chinese food's pretty solid too.
True, yeah.
I think nothing like pasta too. Sorry, pasta, like if you get like a penne or something.
No, that's exactly what I was just saying, doesn't work. Yeah.
No, I'm saying, but pasta, I just thought of this. Like, you can tell when it's like, it doesn't work well when all the noodles are split open and now they're flat.
Yes.
Like, they're no longer connected. Like, that's a sign of like a bad traveled pasta dish.
You imagine like explaining that to like someone in customer support, because I have no idea what you're talking about. You're like, hey, my noodles, they were split open.
Oh, you know really, what I mean? It's like, really did. Instead of it being whole, it's just, you know, it's cut. Oh. So it's just flat now.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, it's more so just like when the cheese has time to congeal. And I do think it tastes good when cheese kind of cools down after being hot, becomes real rubberized or whatever. It just doesn't look good. You know, you open it up, it doesn't look like a pie. I mean, it looks like Sbarro, right? And there's nothing wrong with Sbarro, but if you're ordering an, you know, $18 to $32 pasta dish from like whatever, you can only go so far before the travel kind of ruins part of what you're paying for. And that's just the downside.
You like vulcanized cheese on your pasta?
I like cold pizza, man. I like when that cheese cools down. Yeah, and just gets all stringy. It's delicious.
Can't get behind that take.
No.
Although I don't hate cold pizza. That I don't think is that nuts.
Cold pizza is delicious. Cold pizza is better than regular pizza.
Cold all Domino's, right. I think, is better than hot Domino's.
I can't get behind that.
I think it's very certain pizzas work well with it.
I don't know. I think we should get in some news, though.
That's a crazy way to end opening discussion.
No, let's continue the opening discussion
by saying cold. that's crazy. I mean, you just like tomato pie, then.
Me?
Yeah.
I don't believe I've ever had what can be considered as tomato pie.
It's very Philadelphia. It's just pizza with like a pretty heavy sauce on top, cold. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes you'll get like a Parmesan, like a grated Parm sprinkled on top of it.
I think the components in pizza work well cold. I think the bread and the cheese and the sauce all work very well cold.
And that, the, you know how you know, like you'll take like a sauce or something out of the fridge to reheat it, mm-hmm. and you'll take a bite of it even when it's cold. It's like you'll dish it out with the fork, and then you're like, oh, I could clean the fork up, or I could lick the fork. Every now and then, like, it's not a food that should be eaten cold.
It's shocking sometimes when you get that real cold sauce. It's like when you dive into water and then you feel the cold of the water hit your nuts.
Yes.
It's like that sometimes when you get like the cold sauce on your fork. You know, another thing I like cold is quiche.
No, I don't like that. I can't. Cold eggs to me just freaks me the fuck out.
You don't like cold? I like cold eggs.
No, I think can't
eggs.
Do that.
I like when eggs kind of congeal.
You just like this fucking vulcanized stuff.
I'm a big texture guy. I'm a big umami guy. That's what umami means, right?
You like the mouthfeel?
Yeah, like
Kolgan. I like the Kolgan of cold egg. Although good quiche. Quiche just goes underrated. I think quiche fucking bangs. It's so delicious.
Quiche is delicious.
Quiche gets a bad rap because of its name.
Exactly. It's a shit name. It needs a better, like egg pie might be worse though.
Egg pie is definitely worse. Egg pie is absolutely worse.
It sounds even worse the second time.
It's a Johnny Sins movie.
Yeah.
All right. This episode brought to you in part by 3Chi. That's right. 3Chi pronounced 3CHI, industry leader in hemp-derived cannabis products. All products are formulated by a biochemist. All products made in the USA with USA-grown hemp. When they released their Delta 8 products, they were the first federally legal THC products sold in the US since Prohibition started almost 90 years ago, which is believable because anyone who's tried it, they know it's the real deal. It is fantastic. It's a more functional alternative to marijuana for those who want the same great feelings without the negative side effects. Delta 8 will have you feeling amazing yet be functional and clear-headed instead of lazy and paranoid. 3Chi isn't just the best. Again, they invented it. 100% hemp-derived, federally legal, and available online at 3Chi, the number 3CHI.com, and at select retailers around the country. Must be 21 to purchase. Go to 3Chi, 3, and then CHI.com, the shop for Delta 8 vapes, gummies, tinctures, and oils that can be used to make homemade edibles. Use code CAMERA, CAMERA, at checkout to receive 5% off your order. It must be 21 to purchase. Hit those up now. If you got the week off, you got, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday off, have some 3Chi. It won't go wrong. Won't go wrong.
Friendsgiving little activity to do.
Yeah, or just Thanksgiving.
That too.
Yeah. Thank you to 3Chi. First up, not a lot of news, but a trailer to start. Chaos Walking, a movie that I didn't think was ever going to come out. I don't think anyone did. Starring Daisy Ridley. And remember that? Look, if you've never heard of this movie, but you follow movie news, you may have seen the picture. It's a picture in like the woods of blonde-haired Daisy Ridley and Tom Holland. It's that movie. It's been circling forever. Like, that's the picture, and that's been the only picture used. It's been circulating around since we started this pod, basically. At least that's what it seems like. In the not too distant future, Todd Hewitt and Viola, a mysterious girl who crash lands on his planet, where all the women have disappeared and the men are afflicted by the noise, a force that puts all their thoughts on display. In this dangerous landscape, Viola's life
men
is
are incredibly horny.
And as Todd vows to protect her, he will have to discover his own inner power and unlock the planet's dark secrets. A lot of behind the scenes shit. I mean, this movie was shot a long time ago.
I was looking at that picture.
They did reshoots in 2018.
That's wild. Because I was looking at it and Tom Holland looks a lot more beefed up now, right? Like in his Nathan Drake picture. And I'm not saying Tom Holland looks like jacked, but I don't know if I'm making that up in my mind. But I don't know.
He's slim thick with it.
I like the general premise of it because it does sound like some Hideo Kojima stuff where it's like
they shot it three years ago.
You know, Hideo Kojima would just be like, okay, like. And he kind of did this with Death Stranding. He's like, I guess this is the future. And then some people have disappeared, like women in this movie. And then like, if that's not enough, he's also like, men also hear the noise.
The noise, baby. Her, what's he thinking about? Him. Damn, got to unlock so many viewpoints in Assassin's Creed tomorrow. Got to synchronize them in Northumbria.
Well,
this movie looks like shit.
Mads Mikkelsen's in this one too.
He plays a dad.
I think this looks awful.
It doesn't look good, that's for sure. But which kind of sucks because I'm eager to see Daisy Ridley kind of shed Star Wars and do her own shit because I do think she's a very good actress. And even kind of the same with Tom Holland because we saw him. What was the movie? The Devil All the Time. Like I think he was really good in that. And seeing him get away from Marvel and do his own independent things is just love it. Love to see them get away from it, but this again at the same time just doesn't look like a particularly great movie.
I wonder what the twist is here. This seems like a twist movie.
Oh yeah,
like where you know Daisy Ridley being that mysterious girl has some sort of like explanation for like what the noise actually is.
She's the fifth element. She even looks like her with blonde hair instead of red hair.
It does the I mean, it's not great looking hair.
No.
I mean, very intentionally, right? Because it's like this, I don't know what they're just like, if you look at the picture of her and Tom Holland, I guess it makes sense because she is very much not dressed like him with those orange pants and she's got the writing on the pants, which I don't know, like kind of like what she's wearing kind of looks like a straight jacket a little bit and the hair is just unkempt. So it's all by design. It's just, it's like she could have been a prisoner of some sort. I'm not sure. I just don't think it. I think I'm with you, Jeff. Like, I don't know if it looks like shit. It just seems to me like kind of like a boring, just like we need to make a sci-fi movie, but we don't really have a good sci-fi angle on
it. I hope it's fun shit. Like it could be a good fun time of bad stuff. But I don't know. I just something about the YA, like I just the track record doesn't support this being very good.
Well, the only thing I think supports it being good is Doug Liman's doing it.
Yes,
and
it is a plus.
Like that's the reason I'm holding off from saying it looks like shit is because like you know if you look at like what he's done with sci-fi-ish stuff with like Edge of Tomorrow and then. Jumper and like Jumper wasn't great. Jumper had its problems, but I enjoyed Jumper as a stupid movie. And if this is kind of like Jumper, and I don't think it will be like Jumper in the sense that I think Jumper was kind of tongue in cheek with how stupid it was at some points. But I Doug Liman's the only reason I'm not completely writing this off yet.
I think it was a book, right? Like, this is based off a book.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah. Apparently, I was reading the production of Stacey really liked the book growing up.
Oh. Well, I'm going to find out what the twist is now.
If there's some passion about it, then almost, I mean, that's a plus, right?
But Trill, I'm seeing some people saying on Twitter it looks like they added a lot of concepts, so it may not be exactly what the book is. But you look it up, hit us with that after this next bit of news. When you find it, we'll do a spoiler warning for the twist.
No, you did the plot summary on Wikipedia is one of those long plot summaries.
Oh, like, it's too that, no.
Yeah, you know, that's it.
You know, you can tell when somebody who really likes something writes the plot summary on Wikipedia. Yeah. Like, I need a three paragraph plot summary, one for each act.
Try control F turns out.
I need the plot summary to skip like two very important things. Like just give me the main beginning, middle, end event, like, and it'll definitely skip one or two things. That's what I'm going for.
I do want to talk about Daisy Ridley for a second, because I would really want, like, if you could get like a have a beer with her and find out her thoughts on Star Wars, like, I'd really want to know that.
She said that she thought that the what do you call it, the was not the Rise of Skywalker. Yeah, she said that she thought it wrapped up Rey's storyline nicely, and she was like happy with how it ended.
Yeah, but like, part of me would be interested to find out what she really thinks from like what it meant for her own career.
Right? Yeah, that too, for sure.
Because it was good.
Well, it was definitely a positive for her career. Her career was nothing before. I mean, she was young, but
yeah, but like, I'm kind of thinking of it in terms of the arc where, you know, and even when we talked about like Daisy Ridley, like Force Awakens, and then she was in Murder on the Orient Express. I mean, she hasn't really worked a lot while doing Star Wars, which is probably a function of just doing Star Wars and being committed there. But I mean, she did the Murder movie, and then she did Peter Rabbit. And then she's doing Chaos Walking. So I'm interested to see her in a non Star Wars context because you know we enjoy Daisy Ridley. Daisy Ridley is very fun in interviews. You kind of think about, like, you know, you're in this place where like, okay, I get cast in Star Wars. Everyone knows who I am, and like now, like, you know, I'm like the person. And then that Star Wars ends up being bad, and I'm the person associated with that, even though it's not my fault.
Yeah, that is very true. And I don't know if anything will come out from her even a while, because she's the most likely to cut a check from Star Wars still.
Yes.
And from Lucasfilm and Disney, because her character kind of has that.
Yeah.
She's the most important one.
You know what? And look, she's probably fine. Like, I'm probably reading too much into it. I'm just projecting kind of how what I would feel in terms of just like, okay, I'm like casting this and that's great, but like, now, is it going to be like the Mark Hamill thing for me where like I'm the Star Wars person, or do I get like another shot at like a post Star Wars career, or am I going to continue to be involved in Star Wars? Because that's a possibility as well. I don't know. She made a lot of money off of it, so you don't feel bad for her, but I'm like just thinking about like what her career looks like.
No, it is a good thing to kind of think about. I mean, this was one of the things she did that was non-Star Wars. It took 3 years to come out. More. Wait, when's this coming out?
Well, see, they made Chaos Crawling before Chaos Walking.
That's why you think it fucking sounds like a Kojima thing, because it sounds so similar to Death Stranding.
Yes. January 2000.
That's the only reason you think that, but just that and like a vague sci-fi element.
But the concept of like women disappearing and then men seeing their thoughts or having their thoughts projected to others, and then Mads Mikkelsen being in it.
It's dystopian and what women want.
And calling like chaos. Yeah, it's dystopian what women want.
Literally.
Speaking of Disney, speaking of Disney, Disney's 20th Century Studios hired Ten Cloverfield Lane's Dan Trachtenberg to direct a new installment of
10 Cloverfield
Predator.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
It will apparently have nothing to do with the last one.
Thank God.
Which was not good. We reviewed it on this podcast. It was not good. And then they had the suit at the end. Remember the suit?
Oh yeah, no, and we thought it was gonna be Arnold, right? Like we thought that was gonna be the tease that they did at the very end. It's like, oh look, another Predator, and we're like, oh, okay.
It wasn't the worst movie of all time, but it was absolutely not good. You could not consider it a good movie.
You remember how dark that movie was, though?
Yeah, like, the whole thing took place at night.
The whole thing was that's the thing I could not get over. It was like entire thing was at night.
It was a kid movie. It was a Jacob, not a kid's movie. It was a movie based around a kid.
Yeah,
Jacob Tremblay. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. You had
that was a weird subplot.
It was the whole like let's do the telepathic kids thing that crept its way into that into Jurassic World as well.
Yeah, except there's a little more shittier the way they did it than with Jurassic World.
Did that come out? Did that come out after Stranger Things, or is that before Stranger Things?
It was after Stranger Things. Jurassic World or
no? Well, the Jurassic World 2 was.
Both of them are post Stranger Things
because it almost feels like someone's like. And exec's like, dude, fucking telepathic kids are so hot right now. We need a telepathic kid in this movie ASAP.
Would be a smart call. Seems to be all the rage anyway. But that movie was just not particularly good. And I'll say this. I think Predator, like the concept of Predator, the first Predator movie, very, very cool. And I would love to see more of it done like the right way. I don't think any movie after the original Predator was able to capture it. In a way that even comes close to the original film. And I feel like they've done 1,000 movies involving Predator at this point between the actual Predator sequels and the, you're going to call a soft reboot and the Alien vs. Predator shit. Like none of it feels like it's ever done it justice, which is a shame because it's awesome. Hopefully they can do something cool with it.
The Adrian Brody one kind of felt like it was going in that direction.
Yeah, right.
Like when they dropped him into, you know, the opening sequence was being thrown out of the plane or whatever.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't a good movie. I think
it was a showdown. I forgot about that.
I mean, if they're smart, they'll make it into like an actual like high tension thriller, horror thriller type thing. Like, you know,
apparently it's going to be set in the past. This is a new report. It's set in the past. According to AVP Galaxy, it'll be set in the past before settlers stole Native Americans' land.
Very intriguing idea.
I mean, that honestly is a lot more interesting than that kind of grabs my ear a little bit because that is, you know, just having thinking like obviously the predators or whatever their name of alien species are have been around that just been like, you know, chilling out, just watching Earth for a while, interacting with it. So I'm down for that. I think it's too cool. Like I know we complain about remakes and sequels, but I do think like Predator is one like I won't get tired of that in the same way like Terminator. I think the Predator alien is such a badass and there's not much like I really know about it. Whereas with like the Terminator, it's like, okay, like we're going to alter the timeline again. Like we got to start doing this. The Predator just wants to kill stuff.
Mm-hmm. Rip some skulls out.
Yeah. It's hungry for blood. It wants those guts in a meal sort of way.
Cabela's big game hunting.
Right.
Big buck hunter. Yeah. Except it's real people. Shout out to Carl Weathers. Great episode of Mandalorian he directed.
We'll talk about Mando in a second. Yeah.
You guys ever been to the Bass Pro Shop restaurant? They have some of the Bass Pro Shop locations.
I haven't. I've been to Bass Pro Shop and Cabela's plenty, but
God, I love Bass Pro Shop. I mean, you talk about store like 90% of the stuff in there. I have no idea how to use, but I still like going in.
You ever bought anything in Bass Pro Shop or Cabela's?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. I bought stuff there.
I've been plenty. I don't think I've ever walked out with anything.
I think I got a Benchmade knife at one time, and then I didn't buy my gun there. Wait, I don't know. Whatever. It's locked up in a safe.
It's a common thing people have. You're okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
I never bought anything there.
No, I don't want to get in the list of people who have guns. Some dude just keep going through all the podcasts, like which podcasters have guns.
OCB, where'd he get it? We think maybe Cabela's or Best Pro Shop. Not sure.
he got it out of an egg outside of a vending machine.
Best Pro Shop. This episode brought to you in part by Armor Lock. We've been talking about this for a while. Actually, I had to give this to somebody the other day to bring home to get a file off of it. I did the thing we're about to read in the ad read, and I unlocked it from home. Our data privacy is constantly being threatened, leaked films, hacked servers, stolen drives, or just losing it if you're a big dumb idiot. Imagine your valuable media files, legal documents, titles being stolen or getting into the wrong hands. People want to know that their content is protected now more than ever. Imagine if somebody got a hold of our Mandalorian recaps.
Mm-hmm. We fucked.
Unbelievable. G Technology's ArmorLock encrypted NVMe solid state drive and app. They deliver high grade data security with pro grade performance that is amazingly simple to use. Easy unlock with your phone, leveraging modern day digital experiences. Just like digital doors or digital car keys, hotel keys, with ArmorLock, your phone is your key. Though I have not stayed in a hotel where the phone is the key yet. Looking forward
to neither that. Neither have I. Looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. No more remembering passwords or downloading software that slows you down. Just open the ArmorLock app on your phone, your Mac, your computer. Tap the download. Tap the button to unlock, and there you go. The hard drive is all ready to use. ArmorLock leverages the biometric authentication that you already have set up on your phone, making unlocking a drive a frictionless experience. ArmorLock solid state drive, built to withstand the rigors of travel as well, or being shipped. Accidentally dropped, ultra rugged for max durability and reliability. Again, no passwords. Infield software updates push through the app to keep the drive and app up to date, running smoothly. Self formatting too. Upon setup, you can format the drive to exactly what you need. You can manage across PCs, Macs, etc. Manage multiple drives, multiple users. Authorize remote users. That's the big one. Before you ship the drive, go to GetArmorLock, GetArmorLock, to learn more and get yours. GetArmorLock.com. It is a fantastic drive. Disney Realm again, Thor 4 will have an Avengers feel, apparently. I don't find that very surprising. There's going to be a lot of people in it. I assume there could be some surprises. The Guardians of the Galaxy are going to be in it. Christian Bale is apparently in the movie. So, yeah, that's not very shocking. You can throw some comments on that. But also add in this, Deadpool 3 will be rated R. And more importantly, sounds like it will happen. I never – this was kind of the Spider-Man thing. The Molyneux sisters?
Molyneux?
Yeah, I don't know if it's pronounced, but they're involved with Bob's Burgers, right?
Yeah, they're like the – I think they had writers on it.
Yeah, And Ryan Reynolds heavily involved. I never believed this was not going to happen. Like, people were like, oh, Kevin Feige and Disney, they fucking killed Deadpool. They're not going to do Deadpool, fucking Disney. They were going to do Deadpool. They love money. This shit makes money. Mm-hmm. Kevin Feige wants these characters. They were always going to do this movie. It was a matter of when. That was really it. They were never not going to do Deadpool. You don't just get the rights to it and then just never do it. And clearly, because of the way they're integrating the different universes and stuff like that, Deadpool with the ability to, you know, we know time travel is involved in Deadpool anyway, with Cable and the fourth wall breaking, they can get meta and they can get kind of weird with it. So this is a thumbs up to Thor. That's not surprising. Like, I kind of viewed it as like a big team up event anyway, but big thumbs up to Deadpool as well. I'm excited. That's a Ryan Reynolds. That's a role he was made to play. Keep playing it.
You know how Jeff, I mean, you worked under Umbrella, right? Like, I don't have to preach to you how protective they are of their brand, but we've talked about it before and sort of like, it's kind of like when you own like 25% of all the IP out there, you kind of got to go beyond like the PG-13 stuff.
Yeah.
So I didn't think this like wasn't going to happen because Disney would be too afraid to go, you know, make a movie with whatever type of jokes are in Deadpool, which, you know, I find funny. They're humorous. They're, you know, sophomoric in a way I like. I didn't think they were going to not do it because they're like too prudish, even though they are very prudish. I just think like in order to make sure their net's wide enough, they have to be able to use the IP that they spent money to acquire to show in the way that makes the money.
Yeah, I mean, with just to go back and forth between the two things, the Thor 4 thing I think is good because, first of all, you got the three Chrises. You got Pratt now, you got Hemsworth now, you get Christian Bale, you got to use him in the way that's best. Obviously, it had to be a more Taiki Waititi fill. I didn't, that wasn't too surprising. But to what you're saying, Troll, with Deadpool 3, I think that I agree with you in that they're part of the reason they're going to do Deadpool is because they're going want to be able to do it the way people enjoy it. And I don't think more than anything else that Ryan Reynolds would come back if that wasn't the case, because he obviously was part of an experience with Deadpool where they fucked him up really, really bad. And at that point in Ryan Reynolds' career, he wasn't in a place where he could say no to things. But right now in his career, he is. Like, he's in a position where he has enough capital built up and he can just say no. So, like, if he really thought that they were going to destroy this character, he could have just walked away. And he didn't. He's part of it, and he's very heavily involved. So I think it's going to be rated R, and I think it's going to be similar to the rest of them.
He owns a gen company and a cell phone company.
And a soccer team.
He could always just say, no, I don't want to do it. People I'm going to go make some more gen.
We promoted Mint Mobile before Ryan Reynolds did.
That's right. We're technically co-workers. Are we her as employees? I don't know.
Just want to say that.
We're his friends, is what it comes down to.
I mean, he followed me. We're for sure friends.
Well, we're definitely Ryan Reynolds' friends.
They were so threatened by his follow view, they shut your Twitter account down.
Yeah, I know. That fucking bullshit, Jack. You asshole.
Never trust a man with a nose ring. His nose, like...
He's such an asshole, man.
I don't know why it bothers me. Like, it doesn't bother me. Like... DK Metcalf, Alvin Kamara, doesn't bother me. So about Jack's fucking nose ring, it pisses me off. That picture of him and that side by side of him and Zuckerberg is just there. You don't need any context. You need nothing. You just look at it, and if you know who you are, if you know who they are, and you see that picture, you just shake your head.
The thing I do like about Jack, though. Zuckerberg at least seems like he doesn't have the empathy level to understand that he has created the worst website of all time. Mm-hmm. Jack at least seems like he knows he has created the second worst website of all time.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I will give you that. Like, you know how someone like you are so clearly doing something bad or like you're fucking something up, but you do know, you're just like, oh, man, god damn it. You're like, what the fuck? That I see with Jack. Like, he knows deep. Like, yeah, I agree. No. And then but the chameleon has no idea.
No, Zuckerberg, he doesn't know and he doesn't care. And I mean, part of that's kind of cool because like we said before, it's absolutely insane to me that he wants to continue to still run this company and not just cash out. Because I would cash out. That's what I would do. But that's also why I'm not a CEO, right? It's because I don't know how that type of person thinks. I don't know how their brain works, how it fires. I at least feel like I kind of have an inner working on Jack, because Jack, if you look at him, does look like he's bearing the burden of just fucking creating this awful platform. Whereas Zuckerberg's like, oh no, well, we got a payment system, we got marketplace. I mean, a lot of people are doing a lot of good things on here.
He, that picture of the two of them next to each other, and I don't want to ever shame anyone for the way they look, but that was just disgusting. The two of them side by side, they are just slippery, wet, rancid looking humans.
Yeah, but Jack, I think, like, Jack, if he you know, shaved his beard to, you know, an attractive length, I think could be presentable. I just think Zuckerberg, he's got that nerd look, right? Like, and you're not used to seeing that nerd look like in that sort of way at like such a high level. Like in like politicians to some extent are nerds, but typically they're also like slick, you know, and they need to be able to convince other people to like them. So you're used to seeing like, you know, more attractiveness from politicians. And with Zuckerberg, it's just like that dude is one of the richest people in the world, and he's a big old nerd.
It's, you know, my favorite Zuckerberg thing is this video, which I won't even show it to you.
Smoking
meats. He posted
meats.
This. I'll post it on our Twitter, but this is the audio.
New face filters on Instagram today.
Oh.
This is my favorite one so far. Nice job, team.
That video of him, he's such a dweeb in it. Just such a fucking dweeb. And not in a fun way.
And the worst part about it all is like all these big tech CEOs, all CEOs or whatever, oh, they got on a certain level, Fortune 50, Fortune 100. I don't know what the cutoff is. They all have coaches who try to help them with, like, you know, their charisma or their public speaking style or their presentation style. And a lot of it's centered around like earnings calls to make sure, you know, the tone's correct, that they're confident while not sharing too much information, all that stuff. So he's definitely had someone like helping him, and they're probably like, yeah, just put out a video and make yourself likable about the new face features. And he's like, beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, make video likable about facial features.
Doot, doot. Smoking meat ones is better, I think.
Execute.
Oh, yeah.
Zuck.exe.
Smoking meats is probably pound for pound better, but that one right there is just, you're like, oh geez. Like, well, like you're announcing a feature and you immediately make it uncool.
Like, it was so quick.
Just immediately. That's like, it's just uncool.
The smoking meats one is great because it's so obviously like, what are those fucking rubes like? Like, what does a normal man like to do? Oh, he likes to barbecue. Okay. We're out here. We're smoking meats.
Yeah, like people normally do.
I mean, yeah. I mean, people do smoke meats. They just like they don't call them. They're like, hey, what are you doing? People will be like, hey, I just threw a pork butt in the smoker. Would be the normal way to say it. Mm-hmm. The not normal way it would be like, we're smoking meats.
We smoke those meats. That's what regular people do out in Rust Valley, the place that everyone knows.
It's accurate. He is smoking meats for as much as we know. What if he opened up like a barbecue shop? It was like Uncle Zuck's feed bag or something like that.
Oh God, Uncle Zuck's smoking suck.
That's what he quits to do. Yeah.
Yeah. He just opens up a store right across. What's that place in Austin with the good barbecue? The one, there's a bunch of them probably, but
many, Franklin's yeah. is going to be the one that is most known. Yeah.
He just opens across the street from Franklin's or whatever. It's just Uncle Zuck's and he's just trying to compete.
Poor Zuckerberg.
Uncle Zuck's. All right. Anything else? I think that's it for news. All right. Allison Brie. We talked to Allison Brie for a little bit. Got a holiday movie coming out. Talked about a bunch of other things. Of course, she's always in the Marvel rumor train. Then we had her rank. She willingly ranked people like fellow actors and actresses, people with food names. Usually you get those. You're like, oh, I think they're all great. She just went for it. I enjoyed that. Here's our interview with Allison Brie.
All right. We are very happy to be joined by Allison Brie. How are you? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
I think we're okay. No complaints from us. That's what we're going to say. No complaints. Good. We're here to talk about a lot, but let's start out with Happiest Season on Hulu, November 25th. Stars Kristen Stewart, Mackenzie Davis, Aubrey Plaza, Dan Levy, Victor Garber. Go on and on and on. Tell us about Happiest Season, because I know this is one of many movies in 2020, very greatly affected by the fact that movies are just very different now.
Sure. Well, I mean, the good news is that we shot the movie right before the shutdown. So we finished at the very end of February, about a week or two before everybody was on lockdown. So shooting was not affected by COVID at all. Maybe that's not what you meant when you were like, tell me about the movie. Should I tell you the plot of the movie?
It was a two
note both for sure.
Yeah.
Well, the plot of the movie follows Kristen Stewart's character, Abby, who is going home with her girlfriend, Harper, for the holidays, and she has plans to propose at their big family Christmas Eve party, only to find out that her girlfriend, Harper, has not come out to her family and that they both essentially have to be in the closet for the duration of this trip. And I play Mackenzie's older sister, Sloane, and the two of us have a very competitive relationship. We have been competing for our parents' love and affection and attention since we were young kids. And, you know, really, it's honestly, I think, an instant classic. It really rings of all those, you know, all the things that mean a holiday classic, which is like family drama. It couldn't be more Christmassy. There's a lot of heart. There's a lot of romance. There's a happy ending. And it's joyful. I love it. I'm so excited to be in it. I kind of realized that I've never been in a big Christmas ensemble comedy before, and it's one of my favorite genres of movie. I feel like this year, you know, I did my husband Dave's movie, which is a horror thriller, and then Happiest Season is this real holiday rom-com. I'm like checking genres off my bucket list.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, because your first one, you said your first big one, it started filming in January, I believe, right?
Yeah.
That's after Christmas. I always, like, if someone says, oh, I watched Home Alone in July, I'm disgusted. Because it's just like, how do you get in the Christmas spirit after Christmas for a movie filming? That's got to be a little tough, right?
Well, first of all, Jeff, I have to tell you that Dave and I did watch Home Alone in July.
Oh, no.
It was on our list. We've been quarantined. What else are we doing? We've been watching tons of movies. And can I say Home Alone really holds up? But obviously there's a fair amount of nostalgia for me and everybody who grew up with that movie, but it's so well done. Okay, so enough about Home Alone. They've had enough attention over the years. You know, it actually was kind of great. I did not mind shooting it after the holidays, especially because we shot it in Pittsburgh. And I'm born and raised in Los Angeles. I don't ever have a white Christmas. I'm honestly not that into Christmas, even though I love the movie. I do love Christmas movies. Christmas is not my favorite, but something about getting to Pittsburgh and just there was snow everywhere. I've never been so cold, and to be able to experience that for like a month felt very novel, you know. And the first scenes that I was shooting were on the ice skating rink. So, and everything was decorated for Christmas. And of course the house that we shot in was a big set, and it was all decorated for Christmas. So like, I didn't mind. It was kind of like, I hope my family doesn't hear this, but it was like better than most Christmases was this my like post-Christmas shooting this movie. And the cast is so amazing. Everyone's so lovely. Like, we all felt like a family immediately. I was like, I love my new movie family.
It's coming out obviously at a great time. Obviously going to Hulu too. Oh yeah, go ahead, Ken.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, so this is going to Hulu. This is originally slated for a theatrical release. So as an actress, maybe from your perspective, how do you feel about the theater versus theater experience anyway versus the streaming debate?
Well, obviously this year it's so different. I do think it's a shame that people won't get to see this movie in the theaters, especially because it's such an important film for the LGBTQ community. It's the first holiday rom-com that's backed by a studio that features a gay couple at the center of the story. Mm-hmm. And like, I think it might have been a great thing to have people buy tickets and see it in the theater and have that big screen experience. But obviously there's a lot going on. And I was really relieved and excited to find out that it was coming out on Hulu this year. I mean, I work a ton with Netflix. Love streaming. I watch stuff, and because of quarantine, I was already sort of nervous, like, would I want my parents to go to the theater to see this right now? Seemed pretty dicey. Obviously, we don't want to put anyone in danger. So I was really excited that it would be on Hulu and we could all watch it on Thanksgiving together. And whether families are together or apart, they can just, it's so easy, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know where I firmly stand. I didn't answer the full question about like, I just don't know about streaming versus theaters. I do still think there is a great magic to going to a movie theater and seeing movies on the big screen. But like, even for this kind of movie, to watch it in your home, I think will feel really cozy and Christmassy and nice.
Well, comedy, I'll say good. Comedy
is a barrier for entry too, to be able to watch it.
Comedy is definitely one of those two that it feels important. Because another movie you've been in, I always bring up as an example of this, is The Disaster Artist. Ken Jack and I saw that together in theaters, and that was
incredible experience.
It was raucous. And you're like, You know, like now and then you're like, I just want new movies to come out so I can watch them at home. But then you're like, but you won't get that. And that's such a big part.
It's true. And you could say it about a number of genres. I've been going through this experience now all year. So again, like when Dave's movie, The Rental, came out, it's like there's something about seeing a horror movie in the theater and like the whole audience is gasping at the same time. Mm-hmm. And similarly, absolutely, comedies, it's fun to be in the theater. And like, I think sometimes it's helpful for the movie because it's like, I don't know, I feel like maybe I find a movie funnier if I'm watching it with an audience and everyone's laughing and I'm like, yeah, it is, it's hilarious. Versus like you're home alone like when you're home by yourself, oh, there's Home Alone again, just keeps trying to weasel its way into this podcast. When you're home by yourself, I feel like seldom are you just like cackling out loud, although I've been known to do it from time to time. Yeah, the communal, it's going to be sad to miss the communal experience, but I don't know. It's the trade-off for getting to watch it immediately. You could watch it in your sweats.
Very
you could,
true.
You know, pop a bottle of wine or, you know, Martinelli's.
Yes. Yeah.
So we have to talk about Community. Community, yeah. Maybe one of the more universally beloved shows, I mean, I've ever seen, where like the reaction to anyone who's seen it is so overwhelmingly positive, and there's so much adulation for the show. So what do you think, as someone who's part of it, was the secret sauce for that all coming together the way it did?
Gosh, it's hard to say. I think it's there's so many components. I mean, obviously Dan Harmon, we always talk about his crazy genius mind, and you know, I think he really fought every season of the show to push against network boundaries and you know, just kind of break out of the box and challenge the norms of a sitcom and things like that. So that I think that was, you know, a major ingredient. But I also think there is something with certain television shows, especially when a cast comes together in a certain way and has amazing chemistry. And I think that we all clicked together so well, and everybody kind of had a different sense of humor, and it slowly sort of morphed into the same sense of humor. And we suddenly developed all these inside jokes. Like, it was such a show of inside jokes forever, because I think early on it became very clear that we had a small but very passionate fan base. And then Dan just started writing to them. And then we all just were like talking exclusively to them. And I feel like the voice of the show just really speaks to our specific fans. And the cast is all that way too. And we're still so close. It's a really cool thing. I kind of can't believe it all the time, you know, as time marches on and people continue to love the show, and now that people have been discovering it newly on Netflix, it's very cool.
Yeah, I do streaming blogs every week, and whenever I recommend the Community, I'll get like a tweet a week later like, I just started Community and now I can't stop, like I'm blowing through the series. It's amazing.
It's so exciting. I couldn't have predicted that when we first started shooting the show. I think I would never. I was just sort of like, oh, this will be a fun comedy.
And there it goes, like so many seasons later. Yeah. So that show had so many funny minds on it. And I was just curious, who's maybe the funniest person offset, like the person that made you laugh the hardest?
Oh, Donald Glover, absolutely. I feel like that would be a unanimous decision from everybody in the cast, especially in the first few seasons of the show, because then he wasn't on, especially when he was there, you know, yeah, and then when he forgot, he wasn't making us laugh as much. But Donald and Joel would go on these riffs doing bits together, and we just would be like crying laughing.
Two people connected to Community, though, the Russo brothers, are also connected to something that you are always associated with when it comes to rumors. You are, I think, top five most associated with Marvel rumor person.
It's weird.
Which I know you've talked about. You've talked about like the She-Hulk thing before. And if it's not that, it's like other things. It's like, oh, she could be in Fantastic Four. I know you've talked about like, it's flattering. It's great to hear. But is there, because I know you've done some animated voice work in terms of Marvel, sure. But is there one live action role if you get in Marvel? And your community cast members have had plenty of roles in Marvel movies as well. Is there one if you could have, you take it? Yeah, I know, right?
No, I can't predict. I there certainly have been some that have come and gone that I was like, ooh, that would have been so cool. But, you know, I don't know. I feel like there must be crossover between Community fans and Marvel fans, which is why I'm often at the top of those like fan conspiracy lists. And I love Marvel. I always am like, I'd be open to it. I feel like at this point, Marvel's like, we know, we'll call you if we want that. But I did just actually direct an episode of Marvel 616, which is a new documentary anthology series for Disney Plus, which comes out on Friday. So that was my first foray really into, well, and yeah, I guess I did like a voiceover for a, I don't know, video Black game Widow, right? app. We don't count it, We don't.
Okay. Count. Yeah. No. You're like. No. Don't. You can't say I've done it.
Nobody say to. I've done it. Yeah. We're still fingers crossed. No.
Would there be an ideal role for you to want to take in Marvel? Like maybe one where you're like, man, they haven't made this yet, and I would really love it.
I just don't know. I in the episode I directed, we featured Ms. Marvel and Squirrel Girl a lot. Obviously, I would not be right to play Ms. Marvel for a number of reasons. But Squirrel Girl is a pretty cool character and one that I grew very fond of because of the high school kids' connection to it. But I feel like, you know, dye my hair red. Baby, I could be a squirrel girl with a little squirrel best friend with squirrel powers. What if it's such a funny power to have, but actually pretty cool.
That's Marvel, man. So another one, the Lego movie both of us love very much. Lord Miller, obviously the brains behind the Lego movie. They are taking over the world, basically. Oh, yeah. Everyone wants a piece of Lord Miller. What do you think sets them apart?
Oh, gosh. Well, first of all, my husband is shooting something with them right now, a miniseries for Apple TV.
That's right. So I remember about that. Yep.
Yeah, the after party. So yes, we definitely love those guys. I think that, I mean, creatively, what they do is so interesting and different. And I think that they just always approach things in the same fresh way. And like similarly to a Dan Harmon, but not as, but different, I just think that they have a really high, they're so funny. They have a really high standard of comedy. They want to push boundaries and they won't compromise. You know what I mean? I think they will. Mm-hmm. They're like the most lovely and accommodating people with actors they have. And it's so fun to work with them. But I do feel like they're like, this is our idea. We want to go full force into that idea, lean all the way in, or it's not going to work. And you're like, yeah. You got to just trust them because I think they're two of the funniest people who are making things right now.
The Jump Street movies, you know those movies well. Those are unreal. I mean, you want to talk about like instant classics in terms of like newer comedies? It's just still
unreal funny.
I will watch 21 Jump Street, the first one, the new one, all the time. Like my husband gets home and is like, he's like he's on TV and I'm like, I love this movie.
there's just something about so Jonah, good. Even just Jonah Hill walking around the corner with a box of tacos that just gets me to laugh.
My favorite single. Part is when the guy comes to the party and he's like, you're up in here, like, you know, true story. And then he's like, what, Scott? That's something I do a lot.
Just the fact that they rebooted that, because I never forget my dad. It's like, I didn't know much about 21 Jump Street. My dad was like, 21 Jump Street. He was like, that's just not a chance that's going to be like a good comedy. And it's like, yeah, it is an instant classic. It drives with the super bads of the world, and it's a newer comedy for sure. But speaking of favorite movies, maybe this is on your list. We like putting people on the spot. Six movies. You can pick from any genre. Six of your favorites, six of your best. We just like hearing people's six movies they pick on the spot.
Oh, yeah.
You could just keep only six movies.
Yep. Great. Okay. The American President, starring Annette Bening and Michael Douglas. We're going to do Alien, the original. Silence of the Lambs. I'm going to do Broadcast News.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to do Working Girl and Lucky Number Six. What will it be? Maybe just to depart slightly from these older movies, how about something like Squid and the Whale?
Okay.
You didn't see that coming.
Impressively fast, too. Like, six you had to think about. I think the record holder is Matt Bomer. Matt Bomer, like, I think he's just keeps six movies on his hand. He's like, yeah, it's all these. He's like, yeah, I know.
It was incredible.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
He was within seconds. It was still blows my mind. All right, now you're going to have to power rank something for us. Power rank food actors for us. So there's going to be you, Allison Brie. There's going to be
number two,
Brie Larson. Okay. Then there's going to be Kevin Bacon.
Okay.
Then we got Sean Bean. And then we have Halle Berry.
Oh, well, Sean Bean is everyone's favorite villain. So he's amazing. Wait, you want me to put these in order of favorite to least favorite?
Favorite to least favorite.
You can factor in food,
this
too.
Is very,
food
is it inside to your psyche.
Okay, you're right. You're right. Okay, let's go through them again. So I love Kevin Bacon as an actor, but I don't eat pork. So we're going to put Kevin B on the bottom.
Sorry, Kevin Bacon.
Yep.
You know what? And let's put me under him just so that I can. We'll put me at the very bottom. Then Kevin Bacon. Then
Brie Larson, Sean Bean, and Halle Berry left. Yeah.
Okay. We're going to go. Okay. Here it is. Me, Kevin Bacon, Sean Bean. This is tough. We're going to go Halle Berry, Brie Larson.
Okay.
Love that.
Fellow it sort Brie. Of feels like it's like a still a win for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I like the Brie bookends.
Great
the
value.
Brie, yeah. The Brie team can take that. And that's
it's a
win.
Real win. Yeah.
It's a Brie. It's a literal Brie sandwich.
Yeah, exactly. And no, before I feel like no one's really doing that where they use the Brie as the bread for the sandwich.
Yeah,
I don't know
keto.
Why. I can't
that's brilliant.
Imagine why.
It's keto.
That is
it works.
Probably a YouTube video you just haven't seen where the cheese is.
Yeah.
It's out there. Yeah.
There's a big charcuterie fan who is definitely, that's what they do.
Icky Fingers Jones. I love a Brie on the outside sandwich. Okay.
We have a coworker, Captain Cons. He was in the military twice. He just didn't call himself like, he's not like Captain Crunch, but he ranks charcuterie boards. I could see him being like a Brie. Yeah.
If you leave the skin on the Brie, it actually would work okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Some good texture to that.
The more I'm thinking
about
it.
Or if you put it between. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's not a terrible idea.
November 25th. That's a week from from when this drops. It is out. Happiest Season on Hulu. You also mentioned Marvel 616. I know over the summer we didn't get to talk about it. You did talk very briefly about The Rental, which I know you've talked about a little bit the last couple of days. Can check that out as well. To. Anything else before we go? Is there any? Because I know you are a very busy person.
Oh, yes. I'm in another film called Promising Young Woman that comes out on Christmas.
Yes.
And I guess I'm not sure. Right? Yes, Carey Mulligan stars in it. And then there's like an amazing cast of people that we all pop in for like a couple scenes. But it's like a poppy Me Too revenge thriller, dark comedy.
Very neon. I loved that trailer.
Oh, yeah. The trailer, it really encapsulates the tone of that movie, which is so specific and so unique. Carrie is incredible. She's such a great actress. And Emerald Fennell, who directed it, just has a real idiosyncratic mind. And I think she put together something very unique tonally. And it was at Sundance this year. And I love it. I think it's so different than anything I've been a part of before. So I'm proud of that one. I don't know. I'm not sure what's going to happen. I feel like the plan was that it was supposed to come out in theaters, but so I'm just waiting to hear if it's pivoting or what, but it is supposed to come out on Christmas Day. Who doesn't love a Me Too revenge thriller?
Yes.
On Christmas.
If theaters are open though, exactly. I think I'll see anything regardless of what it is.
Yeah.
Thank you again. Happy season, November 25th. We'll go start the scroll roll now. That's the goal.
Great.
Thank you so much. We'd love to talk to you again, but happy holidays. Enjoy your Thanksgiving, obviously.
Thanks, you guys. Happy holidays.
Have a good one.
Big thanks to Allison Brie. Very fun. Feel free to join the pod anytime you want.
Also, bring back Glow, Netflix.
We didn't even get to Glow, but that's also partly because everyone had been interviewing her that week and talking about it, so it just felt like.
Yeah, but this is the part where her PR firm listens to this podcast to see what we say about it. We're saying bring back Glow.
True,
it's true. It's the official stance of LCB.
Yep. That is true. They do listen, by the way.
It's a fact.
But not that's not even me. Yeah, I mean, so hello.
You're doing a good job. You're doing your job today. You're going through some podcasts. We want Glow to come back. And
we're
also
Glow guys.
Yeah, we're Glow guys.
All right. Let's do our review. Run. From the same people in person, Anish Chaganti, who did the movie Searching with John Cho. This was the movie that was done through a computer. You're looking through the computer screen at what was happening in the movie. It was a very, I don't want to say innovative because we'd seen other movies like it, but he was the first one to do it well.
Yeah. John Cho, surprisingly, Deborah Messing. Just nothing that you expect Deborah Messing. Searching is a super underrated movie that I will always suggest to people if they want something different. It is an awesome movie. This was his follow-up. We've talked about this before, talked about it a handful of times. Unfortunately, there's not a great synopsis. like a short synopsis. Let me try IMDb. If you're thinking about watching this and you don't want to do a review, no, that's not it either. Let's see. Hold on. A homeschooled teenager begins to suspect her mother is keeping a dark secret from her. That'll work. You think I could do it on the fly, but I just can't. That's just not – it's hard to sum a thing up in two sentences. The name that'll stick out most to you, Sarah Paulson, one of the two leads in the movie. Again, it's on Hulu. It's a pretty quick breeze of a movie. I would say off the top, definitely give it a shot. Definitely give it a try. Is it as good as Searching? We'll get into that in a second. But Ken Jack, I'll start with you. You seem to really enjoy today. What did you think about Run? Spoilers ahead. Run on Hulu from the people who brought you Searching.
I really enjoyed it. And I know that we talk a lot, or at least I talk a lot, about how I don't think that there's enough like average level horror movies that come out. Like they're usually either really good or just garbage. I think this is like a perfectly average level horror movie, which I enjoyed about it. It felt quick, felt easy. I think there's definitely problems with it, but overall I really enjoyed the concept and I really, really liked the way that it was shot. They used a lot of cool effects in it. Like they used a dolly zoom. I haven't seen a dolly zoom in years. Like, you know, the Jaws effect when he realizes that there's a shark attack. I haven't seen that in a long time. They use that. They use a lot of good, cool symmetrical shots, which are like the automatic, like simple brain, like, oh, this is cinema. I think there's a lot of good acting moments, but there's also a lot of very bad acting moments. And I think that's honestly what kind of hurts this movie a lot, is that I really, really like the concept of this because it's basically Misery. It's the movie Misery, except instead of breaking the fucking guy's legs with a hammer, it's you're drug inducing this person into essentially being like a passive, more or less. So like that part I think is really, really cool. I think the setting is great, like this, that Pacific Northwest-ish area, whatever. I think the whole pacing of the film was awesome. I just didn't particularly like Sarah Paulson in this because I think she's really good at playing crazy, but I don't think she's very good at playing menacing. You know, like at no point did I feel threatened by her. Like she's going nuts, obviously, but I'm not scared by her. And I think the actress, I blank on the name that played the teenager, she was good at parts, but also very bad at other parts. And
Kira Allen, rather newcomer to the scene.
Yeah, newcomer to the scene. And so I think she was very, very good in a lot of scenes, considering how much the movie just is bent on her focus and her doing a lot of physical acting. I think that is excellent. But I think a lot of the moments that were supposed to be sort of like a gut punch, she didn't really deliver too much. So I left the movie kind of wishing that there was two different actors or actresses that had those roles, because I don't think either of them were particularly well fitted for them. So this isn't necessarily a strike against the director, because I think they did a phenomenal job with the movie. Just I don't think the acting was maybe... I don't think they were cast correctly. That's basically it. So it's fun. I gave it an 81. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Fast, easy to watch, easy to pick up. You pretty much know exactly what's going to happen 5 minutes into the movie. Like you can figure out the entire plot. But I liked it. It's easy.
Yeah, it is. What did you give it?
I gave it an 81.
Okay, yeah. It's definitely an enjoyable, again, quick burn. I don't think anything really... like blew me away in terms of twist, and we'll talk about the twist and kind of where the movie ends up. And it seems mildly predictable, but I don't know. I like this director a lot. I like Chigante. I think he's got a really good sense of pace with thriller. You saw it with Searching. You saw it with this. I think a lot of thrillers we see recently, they are good, but with the thriller genre side of things, for horror being kind of the popular thing, in large part due to Get Out and you know how Get Out kind of shifted the landscape, I think people try to overcomplicate and overcomplex things, and maybe this one was a little too simple, but it was straightforward and to the point and didn't overconvolute itself. And I really enjoyed that. And he's got a great sense of style. And I love the Pacific Northwest thing. You're right. I think that's a great, it's a great setting. Not like the first time I've ever done that, but it's a great setting for these types of movies. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I'd give it an 86 out of 100. And we'll get into the twist. I think that's where this movie really, you know, you talk about quality of story and if they really got you. I don't think it's quite as good as Searching, though. I will note that. I think Searching, this is really good and very solid. Searching was something that felt incredibly fresh and unique. But again, both I enjoy quite a bit. I'd give Searching a very, very slight edge. Very slight. I'm sure I only had it rated like two or three points higher max. But no, I quite enjoyed Run. And again, this is a movie that would it have killed the box office? Probably not. But this feels above the quality of a stream movie as well. So you really appreciate when something like this is on Hulu. This is kind of like, again, as the Netflix holiday movies roll on in, you're like, what's like streaming quality and what's this? This is a fucking movie.
I think this was supposed to be released on Mother's Day.
Would make sense.
I if I'm not wrong, I think this was actually intended to go to theaters.
You are correct. Yeah.
And it felt, if you're right, I hate to use the word cinematography as such like a amateur in terms of talking about it, but I'll say like in terms of the way it looks compared to what we consider to be like direct to streaming movies or like your average direct to stream movies. Like I thought that this looks fantastic. I mean, in the Pacific Northwest setting is filmed really well. Like the house is filmed really well. There are a few shots I really liked that. Like when, you know, when she goes to Google the medicine and then pulls back and you kind of got, you know, the Sarah Paulson character like in the background, which on its, you know, on a premise basis, it seems kind of tired, but it's just hitting the beats of like a thriller and it's executed in a way that doesn't make it like seem cliche, even though it, you know, it's pretty standard of like somebody watching in the background or whatever for these types of movies. You know, another thing would be like the scene where she peels back the label on the pill bottle. I think those were executed in a way that and I enjoyed the acting in them to make it feel like intriguing, even though you kind of got a good sense of like what the major plot beats would be, like not really exactly what the exact twist would be, but like, you know, obviously just from watching the trailer, you know, something's off, but you know, it's kind of like, that's where these movies work really well is like, you stay one step ahead of the main character. And that allows you to do the thing where you're like telling the main character to get out. And that's fun. It's fun to know a little bit more than the main character, but to not know everything. And I thought this movie did that pretty well. I give it a 75. Like it's, you know, where I take off from it. And I don't know, you know, what it set out to be, but it didn't feel like there's any grander aspirations than just a small story. And that's fine. But also like comparing it to something like Searching, which I think we universally really liked on the podcast, it was a little disappointing, but also like a high bar to clear. So you can't take too many points off for that. Like it was solid. It was a solid flick.
What do we think about, well, let's kind of go into it. Cause I think it's solid. And maybe the story is why, again, it's not overly complex. And I think that's the thing. I think quality of movie, I'm trying to figure out a way to explain it. It makes kind of sense. I think like the movie as a whole is maybe like a better quality movie, like better made. And I think the restraints of the type of movie that Searching was, because it kind of fit into this weird box. It was very creative, but I think that maybe wasn't as good as the story, where this one, I think the story maybe wasn't as good as how well the movie was made. Cause I like the way this movie looked a lot. I like the way the movie felt. I like the pacing. I thought the script was probably better. But in terms of story, it wasn't, I don't know if the story was, as interesting, or as complex as Searching, at least in a way, not complex, wrong word, cause I just said, I like that wasn't as complex, but as intriguing in terms of the reveals and what happened. Like Kenjack, you said you kind of predicted it fairly early on. You kind of knew where it was going and what happened. I mean, the first beat of the movie, they show you that something happened at the hospital, and you kind of have to assume, knowing the director and the type of movie, that was obviously not really what happened.
Yeah, like five, 10 minutes in, I feel like I got a grasp of exactly everything that was going to happen in the movie, and it pretty much followed those beats. But I think what makes it better than another movie that might do that same thing is that like it was, from a technical side of things, done extremely well. And like, yeah, a lot of the parts where you have a lot of suspense or a lot of, I'll just say, anxiety, like they do a good job making you feel that. And again, this is almost more impressive considering I don't, again, feel like either actress did a particular or were particularly great for either role. Because I don't find like Sarah Paulson scary. Like I don't find her frightening to me at all. And the fact that I was scared by her in some of these parts, like where, like, let's say with the mailman and shit like that. And when she's like coming down to the basement and she locks herself in the closet, like that stuff, like I was scared more by the technical parts of the movie than I was by her. So overcoming that in a sense, I think even gives the movie more credit. So, but I do think in a sense it was a little predictable, at least in the early onset, but it was simple. It's like you said, it was simple.
I thought Keira Allen did a good job though. I mean, you know, Sarah Paulson can do, and that's part of it. Like, you know, if you watch like Nurse Ratched or whatever it is on Netflix, she does a good job on that. Like, I think she can be sinister when it's written that way. I think they tried to take it there. It's just, the only thing I'm kind of glad they stopped her characterization at like where they did without like trying to give you too much sympathy for her. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Because I feel like that would be like, I don't know. Like I wouldn't like that. Like she was a one note character, right? Like the depth in the characters you're supposed to see was Keira Allen's character. In terms of like this was all happening to her, you know, the Munchausen by proxy was an affliction of her mom. But, you know, all we really needed to know about her is, you know, her child died and she kidnapped this other kid. And
which is hilarious, by the way, that she kept the newspaper clipping of that crime.
Yeah, that was a whiteboard Quiet Place
big time
sort of moment. But I also like. That's a challenge for a filmmaker, right? Is like, how do you like in that, that's kind of the beats the thriller has to hit, right? Is you got to like watch as the main character slowly learns that something's fucked up. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you do that, right? Like, cause it's almost like that seems more organic than like, you know, the mailman coming and it's like, wow, you remind me a lot of that baby that was kidnapped out of the old St. Paul's hospital back in 1998.
Splitting image of your old
that.
Man.
Yeah, that was crazy. And I think your mom actually, her kid died that night. Wow. But so I know what you're saying, but it's also like one of those things where it's you know, you can only do so much and that seems like the best option for what they're trying to do. But like, I almost see like, you know, if someone's trying to be real subversive, they would have like maybe tried to make you feel like, you know, more sympathy for Sarah Paulson's character, try to do more characterization and the fact she was driven to this. And I think they did just enough. Like I think that the main part of it was like the daughter character kind of like coming and realizing it and then being able to, you know, get out of the thriller type situation, but then also like have a second twist at the end where it's kind of like, oh, like that was kind of like that was the cleverish part of the movie. I thought that was the one that I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, I think I'm now like realizing, I probably should have thought before we started the pod, but like I think the thing that I appreciate the most about it is that it doesn't go for the overly complex angle, and what it results in is what I'm trying to say. What I like is that it just really relies on like kind of like a fun panicky vibe, right? Like that's what they're trying to get you to do. They're just trying to get you to share the panic. And I guess Keira Allen, the actress who plays the teenage girl in this, Chloe, does a great job at that because conveys that panicky vibe. Like it's not trying to be, there you go. It's not trying to be something more than it should be. Right.
Right.
And I don't know, like maybe I'm overthinking with other similar thrillers, but I think that's the one issue we get with a lot of these movies now is they try to be very Get Out-y, right? Like they try to be too, it tries to be something that it shouldn't be. And I think Anil Chiganti really has a good sense of that. Like there's no like big, like moral grand, like I'm going to write a 10,000 word fucking piece on this. Like it's very simple and maybe that's a fault to some, but like I just like that he's like, look, this is going to be, this movie knows what it needs to be and it's there to have you through thrills and panic. And that's why it works so well.
Yeah, I mean that's exactly what I guess you did a better job explaining it is like I feel like there's either like, you know, the two ways that you can go is you know, I think when things are subversive, it's good, but I think there's being subversive just for the sake of selling a pitch. And then I also think the other way to go is, you know, tacking on like social commentary to it, which I think can be a good thing too. Like, look, I'm not saying like keep social commentary out of movies. I'm just saying like, you know, you got to kind of, you have to be, and I'm not saying this filmmaker can't achieve that, but like, it has to be really comprehensive, I think, in like, you got to do a really good job to connect both ends and connect the plot completely to the social commentary to like really make it work. And I think that's something that like Get Out does really well. I think that's something, you know, I think that's something The Invisible Man did pretty well. I think there's been some movies that we've reviewed that like have tried to go there, like The Purge, specifically in terms of like what they try to do with social commentary. And like, that's not social commentary. That's just topicality. And so I'm not saying
monetizing a social change to make us buy it, which is gross.
Yeah. They're just taking something that's topical, and I trust this filmmaker to be able to do that. But I think like when I'm picking up what Jeff's saying, it's just, it doesn't do that because the movie just, it wants to tell a very self-contained story about a mother and a daughter. And that's good. Like it's good to have these self-contained stories sometimes without any like grander subversion of expectations or some sort of like hook to try to create like a meta discussion about it on the internet.
Yeah. Offensive isn't the right word, so I'm not going to use that. So that's not what I'm trying to get at here, but revolting, like very, very obvious and just not nuanced social commentary just to do it is a very revolting. Yeah. It fucking sucks and it distracts from everything and takes everything down. So again, I just appreciate that. I love to see him with maybe I wouldn't like, I kind of like he's found a lane, right? With these two movies. Like I want to say like, I want to see him do something bigger, but maybe not. Like maybe just do another one like this. Like I hope he does. I hope he gets the bag. He's incredibly fucking creative. And you know, we need more directors like Anish Chaganti to be doing bigger movies. But I hope he does another one to this size, at least for his next one.
He's very good at these small art house, like me, not even necessarily artists, but these small self-contained stories that just, they really are able to grip you in a way that like the, you know, the garbage mass produced CGI filled ones just don't. And I feel like it's so weird because it seems so easy. Like it seems so easy to make a movie that's like that, that just, you don't need any fancy fancy crazy fucking effects on anything. You just tell a good story. And he's so good at doing that. Again, I don't think the pieces quite came together as well as they did in Searching as they did in this, but I really like the bones of the story and how it was made from a technical standpoint. I really truly did appreciate, because it almost feels as if he didn't set out to tell a horror story. He set out to tell just like a literal like mother-daughter story or drama in a sense, and just the horror or suspense came after that. And that to me is something I appreciate as someone who maybe isn't a huge fan of horror, but I'm a fan of good storytelling.
Well, it's also worth mentioning that, you know, both this movie and Searching was written by him, co-written by him and Sev Ohanian. And, you know, like that's another plus for it too, right? Like, you know, directing is one thing, but being able to actually write the story and then direct it or co-write it with somebody and then direct it. And I think both are very, very, you know, I don't want to say like competently almost lowballs it, because they're good, right? Like they're good stories. So it's like this. Yeah. I know what Jeff's saying. You almost want to continue this path of like this, like singer song. If you like parallel it to the music industry, it's kind of like singer songwriter type thing where you're writing your own thing and then you're getting to direct it. And then it almost feels like, you know, once you get discovered, you start directing other people's things. And then all of a sudden you're tacked onto Thor 5.
Yeah.
And we love the comic book movies, folks. But ultimately, it's these types of things that like, you know, these are the ones that like we always talk about in terms of like bitching about like, oh, another remake. Why don't they make original movies? Like this is an original movie. It's, you know, its plot is inspired by other movies, but still, you know, it's a very good movie. So it's still worth making. And we're seeing.
Do we like the? I thought the wasn't a gut punch because you enjoyed it, but I liked her. I liked her giving the pills to her mom at the end. Like I love it because these types of movies where it's such just continuous, like the main character can't win. Misery. You're like, there's no way. Yeah. Yeah. They're like, there's just no way this character's ever going to fucking have the upper hand. It is a nice little, like the little fist pump moment where you're like, oh shit. Like that was,
hey, again, I just didn't like the delivery. Like she's sitting there and she's like, okay, now open wide.
Oh really? Like, so I thought it worked for me. I thought it rolled in because the way she was, I was like, God damn, she's just like, she's just going to go on with her life. And this isn't going to bother her. And she's like, yeah, I'm like, I thought it was kind of a cool dunk at the end.
If she just didn't say anything and like you just saw her starting like take out the pills, like I think that might have even been better. Leave it up to in the air. You know what I mean?
All right. Okay. Yeah, we can disagree there. I can see that though. And a little more subtlety. I just expected, I don't know. It's like, and look, it's that it's not, it's wouldn't have been an ambiguous ending because she explained like what she was and like doing with life and everything. But I don't know. Cause like something I'm always, maybe that's the cynicism in me. You know, we're three other cynical people, I believe now and then. Like I always expect the Gone Girl ending where you're like, motherfucker, are you kidding me? And this one, I was like, oh, she's just going to sit there and be in jail and not really pay for it. And then I was like, oh, okay. She did. She's taking these fucking dog pills.
I liked it. It was, I didn't see that one coming. That's what I liked. I saw the main twist coming just because it that was the intention. And then they telegraphed that. But this one was kind of like, okay, like the daughter has agency and she's just going to say, go fuck yourself. And I like that.
I also want to note too, I like that he didn't run it back with like through the computer thing.
Yes.
Because I feel as move. Someone who's smaller time director, trying to make some money, trying to make a name for, like, I feel like a lot of times a director like that or someone like that would fall into the system of like, make another computer movie. And like, I really appreciate that. Like, I thought that it was a small note, but I think a lot of people fall into that norm. He's like, no, I'm going to try something different. Only other thing is, do you guys know anyone who's homeschooled growing up?
No.
No, man.
I went to college with one home. I went to college with one person who was homeschooled up until college.
I mean, I knew a guy who was homeschooled like that I worked with.
Actually, yeah, now that you say it, I did know someone in my last job that was homeschooled. She like grew up in like some like Christian cult thing in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know why my friend talked to him in years, but
dude, fucking big shot on the Amish here.
No. Wasn't Amish. Was not Amish. I think they were Mennonite or something.
Big shout on the Mennonites.
Our Amish listener is like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah, the many Amish podcast listening community.
You imagine there's an Amish guy out there just like listening to the podcast wearing his baby alien Yoda shirt. Yeah, just ripping it off.
He's
just
got his large canine shirt.
He's yelling at us in old Dutch right
curse,
now.
Curses. He's gonna take a rum springer just to come punch us.
put your head in a fucking butter churn.
He's wearing his LCB hoodie over his "I'm unwell, call her daddy" shirt. It's like motherfucker.
That's the demo that.
What's call up, daddy's bitches? Really searching for. It's yeah. Time we talk Amish about the movie. Amish.
they're the best. I love call her daddy. No, she's the best. I guess now.
Yeah, she's so thankful that you gave her that.
You're like
my old desk mate,
500 times bigger than us in any conceivable metric, and we're just like, well, no offense.
Look, she's my desk mate. We're on equal footing.
Sorry to punch down here.
Cooper's was my desk mate. We're completely on the same level. I met her once. I think I don't know if I told you guys this. I saw Alex at a bar once. I was like, hey, what's up? Like, we're desk mates at Barstool. And she's like, oh, yeah, cool. Walked right away.
I still want to go on.
That'll happen.
Can you imagine that? Can you imagine me just going on being like, I haven't had sex since 2007.
I'm trying to like the suck fucking.
Have you heard of Marilyn Manson?
Trill, what do you give Run?
Sorry, 75.
Okay. 86 from me, 75 from Trill, 81 from Ken Jack, 83 from our audience. Yeah, definitely check it out. Hulu. Absolutely check it out. It's on Hulu.
For sure.
Well, if you don't have Hulu, then I don't know. That's up to you. You can.
Hulu's got live sports. They do.
Man, I'll tell you what, my level of tolerance for Baker Mayfield commercials is so much higher when they're winning.
Yes, yes.
Man, though he does make fun of himself in the Hulu one. He just says, like, people say I do too many commercials. So I do appreciate that.
The Damian Lillard one, you see how they leaned into that and just gave him a more absurd body in the second one that they did? I thought that was smart as well.
Browns are going to miss the playoffs 10-6.
Whoever Mayfield's agent is, I'm sure it's Rosenhaus, probably, stupid question, but like, whoever his team is getting him all those ad deals, they've done a good job.
Absolutely. And he had an awful year last year and they only upped it. Think about that. Yeah. Pretty good agents. Good dude. Shout out to Baker. We did a commercial together, technically. Actually, how about that? Yeah. We actually technically did. He did a commercial for Barstool, technically.
That's right.
I was in it. That Mandalorian, before we get into movie rankings, or actually, wait, I don't know what we're doing middle of the week. We'll figure something out. We are going to drop the pod on Thursday night, on Thanksgiving evening. I don't know what we're going to do yet. We'll figure out what we do. But yeah, there's that. Mandalorian, Trill, I know you watched this week. You watched with your daughter, actually. You showed us. You can watch mine and Ken Jack's thoughts on our recap on YouTube. I mean, we loved it. It was like an action episode. It was really well done by Carl Weathers. The only thing he fucked up is he had an extra in jeans in the background, jeans and a t-shirt. Yeah, he didn't guess he didn't
love that
notice.
Though. There's probably a Wikipedia entry for like a alien race that just wears ceremonial TC Tuggers and jeans.
Well, now it's going to have to be in the visual dictionary for Mandalorian.
It should be. It's Jeans just like the race is just named Todd.
It's the Wrangler species.
Todd from the planet Indianapolis. No, it was good. It was probably my favorite episode of the season so far. I do think they need to pick it up a little bit. I kind of want to see some stuff happen.
The next episode is I think I don't even think there's a question. It's the biggest episode of the series. Next episode, it's titled The Jedi. It's titled The Jedi. The introduction
with Rosario Dawson.
Yeah, if you're a Mando fan but you haven't watched the Clone Wars, first of all, you should watch, or at least watch our recap video on the Clone Wars, because knowing who Ahsoka is will only help. But this is like, it's hard to put it in context from who isn't a big Star Wars fan, but the introduction of Ahsoka Tano as a live action character is a massive fucking deal.
You honestly can't get much bigger as far as Star Wars goes.
It's the biggest character in Star Wars to never have been in a live action, like without even question. I mean, she is the main character in all of the Clone Wars things, becomes basically a main character in Rebels. She's Anakin's Padawan. It's a huge deal. I'm very excited. You know what? I bet whenever quarantine is done and we go back to Star Wars Celebration one day, I bet we'll get a chance to talk to him. Dave Filoni, fucking awesome. I spent a little bit of time with him when I went to Celebration back when I worked at Good Morning America. He is a really cool dude. He just fucking loves Star Wars. And he knows more about Star Wars than I think George Lucas knows about Star Wars. And the fact that he has this as his character, this is his baby, basically, Ahsoka. He gets introduced into live action. That is such a cool moment. And he gets to direct the episode. I'm fired up for him.
I think it's going to be one of the best episodes of the series, hopefully. Because not only is he a good director, his episode was pretty good as well. But again, like you were saying, he's introducing a character that he has so much passion for. He has so much passion for Star Wars in general, which makes everything he's involved with the Star Wars that much better. I'm so fucking excited for this. It's huge.
I hope he hands Baby Yoda to Ahsoka and she's just like, what are you doing?
She throws him over his shoulder like Luke's lightsaber.
What is this?
Like, what do you want me to do with this?
Yeah. It looks like Yoda.
She knows Yoda too. That's the other thing too. She knows Yoda.
Yoda's
like personally, like on a personal level. So like she's gonna be like, that'd be great if that was the line, like first ever swear in Star Wars. What the fuck?
What if she's like, Yoda? What if she just come, do you think she'll come out and just say like what the name of the species is? She's like, oh, that's a pleblorb.
I really hope that is the name.
And they don't even drop it. It's not even like a build up. They're like, man, I haven't seen a bleeblorb since Yoda.
And we're all just sitting there like, what? And they just move on like nothing happened.
Just brush past it,
A bleeburb.
It's a swamp Wookiee.
Swamp Jawa.
And I can't say this enough. The music by Ludwig Göransson is the best part of that show.
He's a monster, man. He's so genius.
I rewatched the episode today just to kind of go back through. Because I will say, the only thing I don't love about doing the recaps is we do them so early on Fridays. I get one watch at it. And so, like, we're taking notes, we watch it. And I don't get to really soak it up as a – like, I don't get to really just enjoy it. And so I try to do a rewatch on the weekend, just, like, sit back and not, like, have any other device or anything. And there's a moment in this new episode – it's Monday. They list spoilers on Monday, so I'm sorry. But where there's a wide-angle shot during, like, the aerial dogfight of the Razor Crest going at a TIE fighter. And when Mando blows up the TIE, the Mandalorian theme kicks in. And, like, I had, like goosebumps during it. And I'm like, damn, like he just made a Star Wars theme that gives people goosebumps. Like, he just made up this theme, and like the behind the scenes of it is he just like, oh yeah, recorders are cool, and he just like played the recorder a couple times, and he made this song like with a synth and all this shit.
Not a fucking easy act to follow, exactly. No, it's like John Williams
to make like a very recognizable, notable Star Wars theme. And I think by the end of season two, like the Mando theme, if not already, is like very ingrained in people's heads. So cool. I mean, the show's just fucking fun, man. Also, it is November, and I believe by the end of the month, speaking of TV shows or TV series or streaming series, Succession should be filming soon. So
fucking hell yeah. They had that picture of I saw a picture of what's his name, Jeremy Strong, filming in New York.
Hell yeah. Oh, okay, I didn't see that.
Interesting outfit on. I'm not gonna spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it, but very interesting outfit.
Yeah, I don't want to see any though. It's like they're in suits or like
no he wasn't, which is okay. So kind of interesting about it.
Okay. All right, let's want to do some rankings here before we, I guess, yeah. It's a draft. Well, we'll do a draft. We'll make it a draft. We'll make it a draft.
Yeah.
Last time it was audience, myself, Ken Jack, and Trill. We'll flip it. It'll be Trill, Ken Jack, myself, then the audience. Fuck the audience. You go in last. You're in last place.
Sorry, dorks.
Yeah. Here we go. Trill, top five foods that make you feel awful. And remember, we're going for food that's good. We're not trying to pick like bad food here.
You're going back to the jar for one more olive with this food.
Yeah. Man, I got to pick McDonald's because you never
feel. Oh, McDonald's. You're doing all. I feel like we got to make you more specific here.
Oh, you got to pick an item.
Okay. McDonald's fries. Because they're delicious. One of the most delicious things on this earth. But you crush a large McDonald's fries and you're questioning everything. You're questioning like your caloric intake for the day. You can smell the McDonald's grease coming out of your pores. Like it makes me feel
takes
like
a month to digest
fucking pig, but I love it so much. Best fries. Feels bad, man.
Have you ever eaten McDonald's fries slowly?
No,
you need to
one at a time.
Quick as possible.
No, I do. I get three at a time. I get like a little trident
and do the dip
fries and do dip
a little trident. Yeah.
Yes. So the ketchup kind of gets in between the three points of
where the biggest glob is.
Yep, they're so good though. But you finish a whole large thing, and especially if you get the really salty ones.
Oh, your mouth is just like fucking puckering up like a butthole.
Yeah, your mouth's coated in the salt and the grease. And you're like, you get the brow grease going.
Yep. Mm. And you just like, you could feel like how oily it is.
It's on the temples of your head, just dripping down like Rudy Giuliani at that press conference. Oh, but God, it's McDonald's.
The tongue thing is, I had a problem with that with sunflower seeds recently. I ate so many, like 3/4 of a bag, and I just couldn't feel the left side of my mouth because they're so sharp and just prickling. It's not fun, folks.
I told you guys this, but I wanted to go back and watch some old reality TV, and I threw on an old episode of The Apprentice, and the reward and the one I just watched was the contestants got to go meet Rudy Giuliani. Talk about a fucking just mind trip. Not to dive us into politics, that was just like, wow. That's aired like 15 years ago. It's like
perception is incredibly different.
We say this every, like everyone says this, but like imagine telling yourself 15 years ago, but that one was like, imagine telling yourself watch that 15 years ago. Like what's currently happening? It gave me like, blew me away for a second. Like, holy shit. Ken Jack, your first pick. Top five foods that make you feel terrible.
My first pick, number one overall for me, is going to be Applebee's half off apps. Very specifically, the boneless wings. which feel like they've been dipped in some sort of material. This super, like, I don't know if viscous is the right term, but the viscosity on it is so thick. It feels like it's like engine sludge with like barbecue flavoring thrown into it. It is so, they're so not good. They're always overdone. They're always like not particularly crispy. They're almost like more like mushy in a sense. But I get them every time. I get two orders. I get one barbecue, one buffalo every time I would go to Half Off Apps. And then I would feel like shit the next day. And for like basically the next 24 hours, while it like slowly forces its way out of your body, it feels like your whole body is just, it's just shutting down piece by piece because this engine sludge just doesn't know how to like break down like normal food. But I go back to it every time. I'm going back to that olive.
The best meme that's ever existed is that Yoda one.
Going back for one more olive.
there was a time where I thought nothing could get, I like crying Jordan from, I had a 2-year stretch of just still being funny to me, and crying Jordan stopped being funny when it was the UNC title game versus Villanova when Jordan was actually at the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when crying Jordan stopped being funny, because then UNC lost in that heartbreaker, and then people did the crying Jordan thing on Jordan in attendance. And I'm like, that finally that one came full circle that night. And then now the Yoda olive meme is the funniest thing to me.
It's so good. It's unbelievable. Never connected with me as hard as almost any other meme.
Next thing on the list here would be me. I'm gonna go a Crave case from In-N-Out.
No, White Castle.
White Castle. Sorry.
It's okay.
Crave case from In-N-Out would be even worse. That's sort of bigger burgers.
Yeah, but it still might be pretty equal for your GI tract.
Yeah, a Crave case is. You have to accept it. You just have to accept that. I've never had White Castle and felt positive after. Like, I've had McDonald's fries and been like, that was good. Like, we can move on. There's very few fast food where I feel like Taco Bell doesn't make me feel terrible at all. Popeyes doesn't.
Taco Bell's the one where people are always like, I got Taco Bell, I'm gonna be sitting on the toilet.
Yeah,
like,
every time.
I'm like, what do you get at Taco Bell? Right?
I said to somebody the other day at work too, they're like, Taco Bell, I'll be shitting my pants the second it hits my mouth. Like, what
save
are you
your thoughts on this. Save your thoughts on this though, and I'll get to it soon.
But Crave case, I get for sure. Like the onion, the sauteed onions is created to empty your bowels. Like the stuff I took for the colonoscopy this year.
God, that's gross. I don't even want to think about it.
Audience going back to back. Number one is Skyline Chili.
Never had it, so I can't really attest to it. But I understand just by like the visual look of it, I agree.
And then the next one is Chipotle.
The last time I ate at Skyline, my dad was in the hospital. And I like looked at the hospital, and then the only restaurant I could see across the street was at Skyline Chili. The only restaurant I could see. Well, that and the Hooters. And I was like, oh God, like this is the most depressing Skyline visit I've ever had.
I've mentioned to you guys before with Chipotle, but I think like their serving size is just like 15% too big, where like you don't want to leave the amount that you're full at, but like you don't want to also throw it away. So like you just eat it. You eat that extra bit, and then you just feel really extra full for the rest of the day. You know what I mean?
Chipotle,
if the serving size is a little bit smaller.
I eat it like a ridiculous amount of Chipotle because I can fit it into like my Weight Watcher stuff. So I do have a lot of Chipotle, so I don't like ever feel bad. But like that because – but like I do feel like you can get a certain amount of Chipotle, and I don't get much on mine at all anymore. Like I don't get cheese. I don't get any of that. Like I basically just get lettuce, chicken, and sauce and like the hot sauce. But like if you get a full burrito, like it – there, and especially if you add like chips and stuff, it does feel like a body blow. It feels like someone like that new commercial where James Harrison is just lighting people up, which is just like a different spin on Terry Tate. Like you just feel like someone just decked you across the middle.
Well, especially if you're counting calories, and you know, just like if you always think about your calories in an abstract, like you're like sitting there at dinner and it's like, well, I probably only had like 600 calories today. And so this 1500 Chipotle meal isn't going to be that bad. even though you had 1700 calories. I hate to go on the calorie counting discussion because we always talk about it, but you can do well at Chipotle, and I think Chipotle is delicious, but there have been times where I've gotten like that right combination of the Rojas salsa and the spiciness and the onions. And it's kind of just lubricated the system up.
I will say the hot salsa at Chipotle, every now and then you get one little seed in it or one little something and that thing will light your fucking day up. I'm not saying you're gonna be shitting the toilet, but you
feel it in your guts.
Sometimes it is so fucking hot and you're like, God, it's just Chipotle. Why do I feel like this? Chipotle is a good pick. That was on my list. I can't take it anymore. I'm going to go anything from 7-Eleven, any food from 7-Eleven at number two. And I know, Cho, you're a big gas station guy, but anything from 7-Eleven, I actually, looking at some of the food from 7-Eleven makes me feel terrible. But like, I've had a taquito from there before, even like their donuts, like it, everything there is so heavy. Like it just feels like you just consumed a brick.
I never did the chicken wings yet, but I don't know what depths of depravity I would have to be at to get one. But I've considered it. I've been at the checkout. It's at the cash wrap, and I'm like, I kind of want to try one.
I've never considered it. Our good buddy Nick has definitely eaten them because he talked all the time. He's had lots of 7-Eleven food. But
it wouldn't shock me at all.
I have watched somebody once order – this was like a week or two ago – ordered all flats / flappers, depending on what you call them, from 7-Eleven. He goes, can I get all flats? Like, I don't want any drums. I was like, wow. That's
you can't be that picky. Beggars can't be choosers, dude. Once you're at the point where you're getting wings from 7-Eleven, you can't be a picky like that.
They did look exasperated too, because they only make a certain amount at a time at 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ken Jack, number two.
Okay, so my number two, it's going to be Taco Bell, but it's only going to be a specific combination of things. And it's the combination that I almost always get. And it's because of one particular item that sets it all off. And, okay, so it's a cheesy gordita crunch, number one, because you got to get that. I sometimes do two, but that's only if you're really feeling it. And then a loaded griller. And then it's the large Pepsi. The large Pepsi is basically like an activation agent for gastritis.
Yeah.
And that large Pepsi just digests everything in all the wrong ways and just, it just fries your guts up. And like, that is the one thing that like, I would suggest getting. Obviously you should be doing Baja Blast anyway, but like, I remember the last time I got it, all they had was just standard Pepsi, and I ate all the food, sucked down this fucking cold ass Pepsi. And it lit my guts up in a really bad way. And I don't think I'm going to be doing that one again.
So I was going to say, This list doesn't mean it's going to make you shit, but it does sound like that's what you just went for.
So it's not like it wasn't like I had like really bad diarrhea or make a fucking loose stool or whatever. Like, I just had a really bad stomach ache for like the next like 4 hours. And I think it was almost entirely to do with a Pepsi mingling just terribly in my stomach the rest of that food.
So originally I was going to say maraschino cherries, but then I realized there's a product. The Hostess cherry pie that is like a fucking greasy pocket of at least 20 maraschino cherries. And you talk about a mouth coating. Those Hostess pies coat your mouth. It makes you feel like that episode of The Simpsons where Homer Simpson drank wax. Your mouth, it feels like it's wearing a sock. Like, those Hostess fruit pies are so delicious, but they make you feel awful.
And I've only had a couple before. I've only had a couple snack pies, like Hostess snack cake pies. But there is a sensation, like that sugary sensation on the first bite too, like that outer coating.
Mm-hmm.
It fucking hits you too.
I love those Hostess cherry pies, but the last time I ate one, I felt like I was going to throw up. There's so much sugar. It's so much fried grease. It's bad, man.
I like the apple one though. I haven't had one in a decade. I do like the apple.
They're so good. They're so good.
Do you know who their old mascot used to be?
Those Twinkie the Kid?
No. You can get a Funko Pop for it.
A Hostess fruit pie had a mascot?
Yeah. It was, I'm sending it right now. It was Fruit Pie the Magician.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember Nick showed me that.
Yeah, Fruit Pie. You can get a Fruit Pie the Magician Funko Pop.
Oh. There's something about that that wax wrapper, tearing open one of those wax wrappers. I remember always getting my dad would take me to 7-Eleven, like 1991. I would get like a Hostess cherry pie, just eat that, crush that with the full, Coke. There wasn't such thing as calories back then. That's why I was fat.
Troy, you do have two in a row.
This one's kind of abstract. It's a frozen pizza. Okay. Like, and I think frozen pizzas are great. The problem with the frozen pizza is you usually end up eating the entire frozen pizza by yourself.
Correct.
And then that makes you feel like shit. Like, yeah, mentally,
you Red Baron,
and you're full, and you're like, I should have just used those calories on an actual real pizza.
Well, because it gives you there's this mindset. Like when you order a full pie and you have two pieces left, you're like, well,
may as well just fucking eat it, man. Save.
Yeah, but if you get a pie from like a real pizza chain or a pizza place, you're gonna put it in tinfoil. You're gonna put it in the fridge or freezer. But if you make that, if you make the pizza, I don't know, but like, just because, like, you know, it's not in the box. Like, there's just this mindset of like, well, I have to eat that. Like, you're not gonna save that.
Well, and the usually the frozen pizzas aren't cut into slices, so like, you know, you can make your own slices with that. And so the serving size, while it says that, it's like, it's abstract, like I was saying.
T.
Yeah,
pictured you or making a frozen pizza and lifting the whole pizza uncut as you eat it.
I've like seen that happen. I had a friend that used to do
taco.
That. Yeah, yeah. I had a friend that would do that. We'd turn it into a taco.
No, I the only frozen pizzas I can eat now are these like freschetta gluten free pizzas, which are actually pretty good, but they're all the gluten free stuff's thin crust because whatever. But I don't even cut it. I just rip and tear as I go along.
Okay, you piecemeal it?
Yeah, just kind of like I'm eating a flatbread, right? Like I'm just like tearing off and then I eat it and I tear off and I eat it. I have some ranch, I dip it in that. It's basically a flatbread at that point because the gluten crust, the like gluten free crust, are so pathetically small.
Mm-hmm.
Frozen pizza is a very good pick. Ken Jack, number three for you, third round.
All right, so for me, it's going to be a Bloomin' Onion, and I go back to the Bloomin' Onion all the time, but it is so fucking greasy, it is so oily, and it just sits in your gut, dude, and it makes me feel like crap when I get home. And no regrets though. Unlike the other options I've had so far, like, there's absolutely no regrets. Like, I sit there with the stomach ache and with a smile on my face, enjoying the shit of it like a fucking masochist, because I love that Bloomin' Onion, and I love that sauce that they have with it so much.
Have you had any of the Bloomin' products that they have on the menu? Because I haven't been in a while, and I did go recently, and I was with someone who tried the Bloomin' Onion chicken, the crusted chicken, and I tried a bite, and it was pretty delicious.
Ooh, I'll have to try that.
Yeah. My third round pick... I've only ever had them twice, and I've felt no. My third round pick is boneless wings from Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yep.
Dude, I've never walked out of there feeling like walked out of there not feeling like I want to vomit all over the sidewalk. Like I've never felt good after Buffalo. I've never felt good after Buffalo Wild Wings ever, not once.
When I was in shape, I used to go there with like my friends, and I would get like wings, and then I'd get the boat of carrots and celery. I was just this fucking weirdo there eating wings and the carrots and celery at Buffalo Wild Wings.
Some places, when a wing place has good carrot and celery, like I love it so much more, to be honest.
when a pizza place has good lettuce and full tomatoes.
Like the Family Guy bit, just like the wedge of tomato.
Anyway, sir, how's your carrot and celery accoutrement here? Is that carrot and celery boat hidden?
That's the blue cheese, sir. Can I dip it in there?
Back to back, McDonald's double quarter pounder. I will say another one. So I'm having fast food withdrawals, very clearly, if you can't tell. But that last bite of a double of a DQP. When it's a really good one that hits, that one last like perfect bite where you've clean plated a double quarter pounder,
mm-hmm.
Satisfying moment. Then a full bag of Lay's, so a lot of people put Lay's potato chips, but someone put full bag, and I kind of understand what they're saying. because like the last remnants, the last third of a bag of Lay's is disgusting. It's so greasy. It's just, it's wet. It's the chips feel wet and gross. Like you're just gonna feel awful.
And your knuckles are getting moist from hitting the sidewalls.
Yep,
hitting the sidewalls of the bag.
Just you got that sour cream and onion Badisi juice on it.
Is there any less satisfying feeling of your knuckles hitting the sidewalls of a bag of chips or like cheese puffs?
Especially like, the ones like that. Oh, it just sour cream and cheddar. Smell my fingers, like yo, dude. Smell my finger.
That's the same with like a pint of ice. Like if you house a pint of ice cream and you get like the little bit of ice cream on your knuckles, like God, that's such a like the amount of sadness that is. Today. That's it's such a crazy amount of sadness. Oh boy. My next pick. Okay, I've only had this a couple times. And I have to pick one item, but it's the fucking disgusting ass Jack in the Box tacos.
Never tried. I don't think I ever will.
Nah, and people swear by them too. They're grease pockets.
I need to try the Burger King ones whenever they bring those back.
Ken Jack, your fourth round pick.
Fourth round pick is going to be the Chinese buffet. Any Chinese buffet. Been to 1,000 Chinese buffets. Feel like every time it's the same experience. Stuff my fucking gut with just fried anything. And you go back for the third plate, like Yoda for that olive, like we were saying. Go to the soft serve machine when it's all said and done. Get the white rabbit candy. And just feel like garbage for the next like 48 hours. It's a horrible feeling when you get out of the Chinese buffet.
I haven't been to a Chinese buffet in the 21st century.
It's brutal.
All Chinese buffet experiences for me predate 2001.
I love Chinese buffets.
Yeah, but you feel like shit after. That's just bona fide fact.
Because you're there, you know, you might as well, like you paid your $17 and then additional like $3.80 for a drink.
I won't put it on my list, but hibachi really makes you, hibachi's like a fucking bag of bricks hitting you. Mm-hmm.
Hibachi's always bad because it's almost like almost feel like hibachi is one of those things that you have to go another place afterwards. Like you're with a group of people and you're going out for hibachi.
Get drinks after.
Yeah, and then like you want to get drinks somewhere else, or you're going back to someone's house, or you know you're having family over and all the family goes back. Uh-huh. Like I always feel like when you go hibachi, it's like and you're sitting around the hibachi grill station. You're in a social setting, and that's not the end of the evening.
It sucks. That's the worst feeling when you feel just so full. You're like, I want to bail and go to bed so bad and just sleep off this fullness.
My homecoming 2002, my buddy like and his group of friends went to Benihana like in Keystone at the Crossing in Indianapolis there, and it was like these rented tuxes or whatever, and fucking like I guess they got charged because the tuxes smelled so bad. When they brought him back, they just smelled like that, that hibachi backshot air.
Oh no! Oh goddamn!
Trill, back to back picks for you to close us out.
Okay, I love French toast, but French toast makes me feel awful.
Really, it's an interesting pick.
Well, it's not light. It's it's bread that's been fried, and sometimes it's like bread that's been fried that's after it's been like spread with butter or whatever. Actually that's probably all the time since it is French toast. And I love French toast, but I'm speaking specifically on the French toast sticks that they used to serve at like school breakfast. Did you guys ever have those?
Yeah.
Those always made me feel horrific.
Yeah. You'd get them like before class starts, you'd show up like 20 minutes early. You get them in the cafeteria.
You just get those Cisco French toast sticks, and you're dunking them in the Cisco syrup cups, and you're sitting there with your buddies eating. And you're like, of course, you got to have the brisk tea that goes with it, and all like 210 calories of it, and you're just slammed up, and you're sitting at like 9:10 in English class, like poops just at the precipice of the sphincter, and you don't know why. It's because of the French toast.
Just so tired. Just brutally tired from that fucking the disgusting syrup.
What's your last one?
My last one is it's gonna be Dots candy.
Yeah, interesting.
I love Dot's
Candy.
I love Dot's Candy.
That's the upset of the set. That's like,
I didn't think a candy would be on here.
That'd be like them reading off the fucking the nominees for Oscar's Best Picture this year, and then the last one is just like fucking Scoob.
I don't know. There's
like some, that that's what, like, I'm stunned right now.
Dots? I love Dots Candy. Dots Candy is one of my favorite candies, but it there's something about, I don't know, like if it's the gel, like how filling it is. It always just feels like it gets into my stomach, and it's like, it's, you know what they say? Like
the paper.
It's like, don't throw rice at weddings because birds eat them and the rice expands in the bird's stomachs or whatever. I feel like Dots is the same thing for me. I feel like that's the rice for the birds, is I'm eating the Dots and then somehow it's that gelatin and it's expanding in my stomach. And then mixed with the sugar and the sweetness, like I'll crush almost an entire box of Dots and then I'll feel awful.
Yeah, I guess that I could see that. When Halloween, whenever I would eat too many of those tiny little boxes, because it's almost like the what's the thing, mini muffins, right? Where it's like, oh, I'm having a bag of mini muffins. It's only four muffins, but you just feel like crap after. It's like that. The Dots, it's like, oh, only four Dots, but you eat five boxes of them. So
no, but I would get the entire theater box of Dots, and I would eat that box of Dots. And then not only do you get the like the feeling in your stomach, your teeth, you have impacted Dot residue in your teeth for days.
Mm-hmm.
It's up there, unless you floss, which, I mean, come on.
Yeah, we're talking that? Indiana. We're talking Indiana movie theaters circa early 2000s. There's no flossing happening.
We're talking Regal theaters, baby.
That Regal cat.
I'm a cool cat who Regal likes movies. Cat.
Ken Jack, last pick.
Can I buy you kids some beer?
Dude, I'm better off with that than the Dots. For me, it's going to be Supermarket Fried Chicken. And this is something me and my brothers used to get all the time. Supermarket Fried Chicken is just, it's horrible. It tastes so good in the moment. Like you're just like it's just a succulent, great chicken from, for me, also a Stop and Shop, and it's nice fried crispy exterior. And then the next like day, you pay for eating all that grease, cause it's nothing but grease. And your chicken skin, like full chicken skin sliding out of your asshole. Right in your toilet. It's so fucking nasty.
By the way, fried chicken, another food that's fantastic cold.
Oh, now you're getting crazy. I can't back that up.
No, fried chicken is delicious cold.
Nothing like that supermarket fried chicken too, where you take one bite and then the rest of the skin just slides right off the chicken. And you're just holding a naked chicken breast. Yeah.
I can almost hear just that plastic bubble case of supermarket fried chicken opening right now.
Yep. Oh yeah. It was that or a cardboard case, like the triangular one that looks like a little house.
One of our coworkers the other day, Big Tennessee Volunteers fan, Hobby Lobby, Chick-fil-A, all those things. He had a bag from Five Guys. It was the greasiest Five Guys bag I've ever seen in my life. It was dark red. It looked wet. It looked like he rolled the bag in a puddle and then brought it inside. That's how greasy it was.
Big T. What a guy.
Go to Five Guys for their hot dogs, obviously.
Another food, great cold, I'm assuming.
No, hot dogs are not good cold.
No, hot dogs are, that thing of the word, revolting.
Yeah.
For me, anything with cream gravy. Anything with that white gravy, I'm going to immediately
feel. You don't like awful. Biscuits and gravy?
Tastes delicious, but
I like it.
Next
I didn't
day.
Say I dislike these.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. I forgot the entire point of the draft.
Which I think we've all broken at some point in this, but I wouldn't say I hate anything I've had. Maybe Jack in the Box tacos.
No, biscuits and gravy is a good one, because biscuits and gravy is like that's – Anytime someone at the table orders biscuits and gravy, everyone else is like, oh, shit.
There is a place in Austin, which I think it closed down. Rachel Ray went there once for like, was it $10 or $20 a day or whatever. Shady Grove. I don't think it exists anymore. I'm pretty sure it closed down. I had a white gravy, like a chicken fried steak type thing, and I got sick. And so that did kind of made me.
I can see how that alters your perspective on it.
Yeah.
White gravy on a chicken fried steak.
Like I love getting it from like Whataburger, but it's like, so I don't live in Austin anymore, obviously. Not that anyone would know this. So I don't get my normal water. So like if I get a Whataburger, I go home and I get my favorite because I know I don't get it often. But if I was there more frequently, like I would get the chicken because the tenders are delicious and the gravy with the Texas toast. And now I'm just craving that. I can't wait to get that when I go home in a few weeks.
Did you see in Colorado where people were waiting half a day, like 12 hours for In-N-Out?
Crazy. And I like In-N-Out. I'm an In-N-Out defender at this point. The In-N-Out slander is just so absurd to me. So much of it is people. I'm convinced 30% of people who say In-N-Out sucks have never had In-N-Out.
It's the regional pride and like whatever their major chain of. They're all good.
It's
they're
a good all, fresh burger good. When you get it, and that's just for what it is. And it's cheap, cheap as hell too. Yeah, imagine just like people like never like imagine just turning down like a good fast food burger if you don't want fast food. Like,
ugh, I'd rather have Arby's
or a meat mountain. Audience, last pick is cheese fries. That's a great pick.
Yeah, damn.
Cheese fries are delicious and they will
poutine.
Yeah,
I've never had poutine, but I would imagine. Yeah,
poutine. Poutine's like the fries with white gravy on it.
Yeah, that's like, true.
That's just straight up.
That's true. Yeah,
it's just, that's Roto-Rooter your intestinal tract.
Canadians, though, they eat it like it's fucking water.
Derrick Henry running through your guts, just just
stomping on it, running hard and angry.
That's it. I don't know what we're doing later in the week. Don't ask. I don't know.
Well, we're not next Sunday, right? We doing an episode this week?
We did last year.
I mean, I'm down for it. I'm not going anywhere.
We'd record it Wednesday night, so
not to brag and moralize on you guys, but I'll be staying here.
Yeah, I mean, I plan on recording Wednesday night. So
no, it's recording Wednesday night. Fuck it.
I don't know. We'll do something different. We'll do something special because we're gonna drop it Thursday evening. We won't do a Wednesday morning drop because I don't know. People aren't really traveling though, so.
I'm watching Grown Ups 2 on the background. I forgot that they like a major set piece in this movie was this like new look Kmart they're trying to go for.
It was a Kmart?
Yeah, they're in a Kmart. Remember, and Tim Meadows' character works in the Kmart?
Oh, okay. Never mind. I was thinking
like, but it's like one. The nicest looking Kmart you've ever seen.
Good for Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
Getting his way into the mall game again.
Yeah.
He needed that.
All right.
That's it. We'll figure out what we're going to review. Maybe we'll do like a show or something. I don't know. We'll figure it out. That's it for Ken, Jack, and Trill. I'm Jeff Lowe. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the bar.